Cade. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! To tell you, for this time of the year, it is a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful night in the hills and hollers of almost level West Virginia. They're predicting up somewhere between 12 and 18 inches of snow for us, and it seems to be coming through as promised. The snow started about 2:30 this afternoon in great wet clumps. And quickly covered the ground, quickly covered the roads. I should know, I was on one. And as by the time I got home, there were at least 2 inches of snow on the ground. And the silence of December snow is unlike anything else. And I guess. You know, for those of you who grew up with snow and grew up in the north, snow is just a regular occurrence and it's a pain in the butt. And, it is. But there's still that little itty-bitty, tiny, just sort of minuscule molecular me that remembers what it was to be young in Alabama when the snow came. And what a miracle it seemed. And what a joy it was, and how it all came all too seldom and was gone all too quickly. And that little guy is what's looking out the windows of my eyes during the first couple of snows of any given winter. And it was beautiful, and it is beautiful. And I, you know, honest to God, I think I'll put the boots on and then the heavy clothes and go for a walk in it this evening. Just to appreciate how it lights up the night with its own reflective power. And then by tomorrow I'll be cursing it. But it's beautiful. And what a lovely backdrop, what a lovely radio setting for a Friday night on the front porch right here on the Horn. We've replaced the long necks in their, zinc galvanized wash tub. We've replaced the long necks with a little bit of mulled cider. You know how it goes. You heat your cider up with your cinnamon and your cloves and your other spices and your orange peel and your lemon peel and your cinnamon stick and pour that into a glass of good rum when it's good and hot. Ah, it'll set you right if you're sitting on the front porch. Yeah, it will. Yeah, of course, the jug's still over in the corner. That's good any time of year. Just pull that corn cob stopper out and take a pull. We've replaced the sweet iced tea with hot tea this time of year. I think we can have a lovely conversation. Lovely conversation this evening as we wrap up this week before the week of Christmas. And just looking at the calendar, just to give you an idea of what's coming and what's going down, obviously, a week from tonight is Christmas night, and so there will be no show. We will have a Christmas Eve show, however, and I hope you all will join in that. I've got the Kincaid Family Readers Theater already working on the traditional Christmas story from the Bible. And there's a classic Truman Capote story that I'm very fond of that I think we'll try to do a reading of just as a matter of tradition. I have played one Christmas song thus far this season, that being the punk version of Feliz Navidad the other evening. I only played that to wash out the nasty version of that right-wing that right-wing smearing of the song. You know what I have to do? I have to replace my Nat King Cole Christmas album because it's got a lot of tick, 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 tick from flaws in the CD. And that just sucks because that's the quintessential. That is the quintessential Christmas album. That and Merry Christmas, Johnny Mathis. That's what I grew up with, those two Christmas albums. But that's what we're looking toward as the week comes along. Of course, we're facing the weekend. Rick Smith will have his show tomorrow and Sunday, as will John Fox, all foxed up on Sunday evening, bringing a little live conversation radio to the weekend, and then we'll kick up again on Monday. So that's Front Porch Friday, or where I think it's headed. Let's see. As I noted in the blog post for this evening, who all here wants to talk about Barack Obama's really good speech in Copenhagen? Not me. Didn't think you did either. I've become so jaded and so frustrated with every legislative process. And you know what? To be fair, I don't blame Barack Obama for a lot of this. His hands are tied by the fact that there is a Senate minority of absolutely drop-dead, crazier than a sprayed roach repiglicans who won't let anything happen. And we have Senate leadership that won't do anything about that. As a consequence, every good thing that might happen for America, don't. So that's a big part of the frustration, but the fact of the matter is real lives are in the balance at Copenhagen. Real lives of people who are at or near sea level. And sea level is rising. You know, I don't care, frankly, and this is one of those things. I'm at the point where, you know, the global warming deniers and the weirdos and the right-wingers and all these freaks that are backed by the fossil fuel, various fossil fuel industries, and, well, there ain't no such thing as man-made global warming. All right, fine. So there's no such thing as man-made global warming. I'll give them that. That does not change the fact that the dadgum ice cap is melting. That does not change the fact that for the first time since the discovery of the Americas, there is an honest-to-God northwest passage from Europe to Asia. You know what I mean? Arguing about whether it's man-made or not is kind of stupid while significant portions of the world face drowning. You know, I'm lucky here in a way. Because if the sea levels rise, the worst I'm facing is beachfront property. You know, with a lot of toxic coal slicks. When the sludge dams overflow and kill everybody in the valleys. Cold comfort, I know. But regardless of the agency behind creating it, the fact of the matter is human lives are at stake. And weird know-nothings like James Inhofe from Oklahoma are willing to stand idly by as long as the oil companies write the damn checks and let people drown. Now, you and I both know that human activity does contribute to global warming. We know that. We don't guess at it. We don't surmise it. We don't suppose it. We don't hypothesize it. It's freaking proven. Inhofe, Dement, Coburn, Corker, that whole weird crew, they don't care. that don't care. And let me say that again. They don't care. Because the people who run the risk of drowning don't have the ability to enlarge these freaks' bank accounts. Man, that's just... You know what? Behavior like that on the part of Inhofe and that crowd is nothing short of psychopathic. It is gross and reckless, deliberate indifference to the value of human life. You know, human lives already not in existence. Not snowflake babies or the blastocysts or embryos. Real, live, breathing, living human beings. And we have a significant minority in this country who simply doesn't care. But here's the rub. Here's the fun part. They may be a significant minority, but they are backed up by American corporations who have all the money. And that brings me to something I mentioned to you last night, something that I posted on my Facebook page. You know, if you want to, all you have to do is friend me, and I'll friend you right back on Facebook. Then when something grabs my attention, I'll share it out, and you can see it and respond to it, and gosh, we'll just have a high old time. But I posted this on my Facebook page. It comes from Daily Kos. Reverbo provided it to me. It is by a diarist by the name is There Is No Spoon. I'm sure that's the punchline to something terribly erudite. Because the writing is... And I say that without my tongue in my cheek. The title of the piece, No One Is Going to Save You Fools, was posted on Wednesday. The author says, before I explain the generic insult, let me first make something perfectly clear. I am your enemy. That you don't know this is understandable. After all, people like me prefer it that way. But until you understand just what you're up against and why, you're going to continue to lose and look like fools in the process. Barack Obama has indeed sold you out. He and many of his Democratic colleagues have sold you out on health care, and they've sold you out on financial reform. You were looking for a savior, and you've been had. Not an altogether atypical result for those looking for a strong leader to save them. He hasn't done this because he's a bad guy. In fact, he's a great guy. I think he's doing pretty much the best job he can. He sold you out because he's not afraid of you. Now, we can probably tick off a little list here. I'm editorializing at this point. This isn't in the body of the article. I think we've got a pretty good list of things that Barack Obama is afraid of. You and me, we ain't on the list. Getting back to the actual text. And really, if I may be so bold, he shouldn't be afraid of you. You don't know who really runs the show, and you're far too fickle and manipulable to count on. You know, I don't know if this applies to the Horn family. I don't think it does. But it is cautionary indeed. Insofar as it does extend to that great mass of people in this country who still are putting some sort of stock in some political process that will yield some sort of meaningful result. That's another editorial part. There Is No Spoon continues, the first thing you need to understand about health care reform is what Jane Hampshire identified long ago, nothing. Absolutely nothing is going to trump the White House's deal with pharma and the insurance industry. The question you need to ask yourselves is, why? If you're intellectually mature enough to get past personal betrayal as your best answer, you'll be on the right track. While you ponder that one, you might also want to consider why nothing has been done. nor will anything serious actually be done about financial industry reform. Standing up to the financial industry in the current political environment should be a no-brainer. So what in the heck is going on? If you can think past shadowy conspiracy theories and possible personal enrichment for the Obama family, you'll be doing the kind of thinking that will help you actually solve the problem. The problem, there is no spoon rights, is people like me and the people I work for. I'm what they call a qualitative research consultant, or QRC for short. There is no spoon lists his or her website. There's even a whole association of us who meet regularly to discuss ideas and tactics, together with the AAPC, the MRA, the AMA, ESOMAR, and a whole host of other organizations that you've never heard of. We have more power and control than you know. We're extremely good at what we do, and we do it all behind the scenes, appealing to and manipulating your subconscious brain in ways that your conscious brain has little to no control over. Give us a little money to test some things out, and we can work magic. Our business is persuasion, and we're very good at it. Just watch PBS Frontline's series, The Persuaders, to get just a small inkling of what you're up against. We can make a company that earns a 38% gross profit margin manufacturing purely proprietary products seem hip, cool, and progressive. We can take sugar water and sell it back to you as a health drink, and even Whole Foods shoppers will believe it. We can take 30 different brands of vodka with almost exactly the same ingredients and make you understand instantly just what kind of person drinks which brand and how much you should expect to pay for each without a moment's thought. For any given category of products, I can show you a bunch of different brands and you'll be able to tell me a wealth of information about each one despite the near absolute similarity of their actual products to one another. One exercise we QRCs like to conduct involves actually turning a brand into a person in a group discussion. It's called personification. Funny, when I went to school, it was called anthropomorphism, but maybe that's too big for America now. And you wouldn't believe how effectively and universally we can tailor a brand's image, right down to what kind of car that person would drive and what music he, she would listen to. So much attention has been paid to Naomi Klein's outstanding shock doctrine that few pay much attention anymore to her far more provocative and important work, No Logo. If all Americans truly internalized the message of no logo, people like me would be out of work and we could really reform this country. For a little coin, we can even make poor people hate inheritance taxes just by using a few little words that work. The biggest difference between Obama and FDR LBJ is that people like me weren't really around back then. As the TV show Mad Men can show you, our industry was just getting off the ground in the mid-1960s. And while it's true that the Democratic ad consultants of the 1980s and 1990s and early aughts were wildly ineffective, that says far more about the prevailing consultant class in the Democratic Party than about the power of ad consulting in general. So here's what you have to understand. If the health insurance and financial industries really felt scared by any particular politician or political party, or their lobbying efforts were inadequate, they could throw them out of power in a heartbeat. With a wave of their hand and a few billion dollars or so in our direction, the pharma companies and Goldman Sachs could absolutely destroy the Democratic Party in 2010 and beyond. The only reason they don't do so is that it's cheaper and easier to buy a few key Democrats off instead and intimidate the rest. Plus, they don't have to run the risk of a right-wing populist backlash either. That's why Barack Obama can't back out of his deal with pharma. Pharma almost single-handedly destroyed Hillary Care in 1993 and spent the money to tip the balance of the elections in 1994. They can easily do it again. So could Goldman Sachs and the rest of the financial vampires. Rahm Emanuel knows this too. The deals are in place in return for their holding their fire. And each and every one of you is being taken for fools. You work for an election or two to put chosen leaders in place and expect those leaders to work their leadership magic to ram reforms down the throats of the corporate sector, failing to understand just how fully the corporate sector holds the cards. It's not the campaign contributions, it's the persuasion money. You're looking for a savior. And like that savior of biblical fame, she isn't coming as long as there are people like me out there. I personally won't work for a company or organization that goes against my personal convictions, but 99% of us certainly will. If you want to win, you will organize. You will organize in the same way the right has done for the last 40 years, and you will spend money on persuasion where it really matters. You will, in short, make the politicians as afraid of you as they are of them. The right has built vast networks of think tanks, newspapers, periodicals, cable news channels, and political advocacy organizations to spread their finely tuned, well-honed messages. Their politicians may fail them, and their actual policies may be deeply unpopular, but their message machine nearly always works its magic to get them what they want, even when Democrats are in power. That's partly because the American political right never quits and never gives up. They know that organization is the key to their success, and they don't trust politicians to do their work for them. Democrats, on the other hand, get disappointed and quit when our politicians don't pan out the way we wanted. That is why we lose. As the healthcare debacle went on month after month, I didn't ask myself why the Democratic politicians weren't pushing single-payer or Medicare for all. I wanted to know where the left-leaning organizations were. Where were the think tanks, the message machine, the newspapers, the whole infrastructure? Where were the national well-tested ad campaigns pushing Medicare for all? Where were the free screenings of Sicko at major movie theaters across the nation, complete with sponsored food and drink for those who attended and signed up to take action? Where were the mid-cycle ads done by Madison Avenue professionals targeting specific senators and making them deeply uncomfortable? Where, in effect, was the message campaign? Didn't exist. What we had were labor unions and the AARP delivering generic, hopeful messages without an ounce of the power or creativity that one might find in a random Budweiser ad. Oh, Louie, you're begging for a pink slip. See, I still remember those Budweiser lizard ads. There is no spoon is right. If you want to win, organize. Develop parallel organizations willing to persuade with the power and intensity of a corporation. As long as people like me are out there, and most of them are willing to work for the highest bidder, you'll need to stop looking for saviors and instead learn to fight fire with fire. The upcoming battles won't wait for us, and there won't be anyone coming to save us but ourselves. Whoa. That's some 150 proof to get Friday on the front porch started, isn't it? And the thing is, so much of this is stuff that you have said and that I have said and that we have all said about the failure of the Democratic Party to even begin to understand messaging. What was that number that we first found more than a year ago? What was that number that for every hour of me, of Malloy, of Guy James, of John Fox, of Rachel Maddow, Keith Olbermann, of Ed Schultz, Stephanie Miller, Tom Hartman, for every hour of something that may generally be delineated as liberal talk, there is over 1,000 hours of mendacious, pernicious, right-wing hate to drown it out. Marty wants to know, whose words are these? These are the words of There Is No Spoon, a diarist at Daily Kos. Baron, hang on just a minute. We will continue, but I am a full-service talk show host. We don't have to worry about computers or or not, well, not computers, but automation or stop tones or anything like that. So just stand by here, Marty. I'll get this right to you. Because Marty's not in the chat room right now, but Marty does appear occasionally come to the chat room, so I don't mind doing it. I will also, is it already been posted in the chat room? Has it? There it is now. Lottie says, the liberal progressive brain sees right through it. That may be. But that just means that apparently there aren't just a whole hell of a lot of us. And it also means that we aren't, it doesn't mean that we aren't doing our job. It just means that there aren't enough of us. And while we do struggle and we do talk and we do carry on, and we engage in polite conversation with our neighbors at the grocery store line and that kind of thing, there aren't enough of us doing it. And of those of us that there are, not enough of us feel empowered to do something like that. Maybe we live in a place where it's downright dangerous to do that. I think about our buddy David in Tennessee who first alerted me to the KKK recruiting cards on the wall of his little post office bulletin board. And there are places where this could take a little guts to do just to talk back about it. But this is true. There is a lot of truth in this. No matter what the best of our elected representatives try to do, we don't have the infrastructure because we have not tried to build the infrastructure with which to magnify the message. Barack Obama occupies the single biggest bully pulpit on the planet. But when he comes out and says something, you can bet that the next morning a bimbette and a couple of creepies will be sitting there on a couch on a set on Fox calling him a traitor or a socialist or a fascist or a socio-fascist because he does not have the infrastructure. The opinion infrastructure, okay? I think maybe one of the things that this article does not do is it does not delineate clearly the difference between journalism and opinion. If journalism is honest, it is neutral and arguably unbiased. You know, real Joe Friday stuff, just the facts, ma'am. Who, what, when, where, why, how, and how much. But in the days, in this day and age of the dying newspaper and the shrinking bottom line and the disappearing journalist, any number of news stories will show to you what the future of straight reporting is, and that is grim. Like it or no, this is a nation that lives by opinion now. I mean, there's Tweety Bird, Chris Matthews, saying that the yous and me's of the world are just sitting in the back seat bitching, his words, not mine, and that we really don't want to be involved in political leadership, that we just want to complain when we have worn out shoes going door to door for political candidates. Of course, this is the same Chris Matthews who said that everybody likes Medicare because Medicare is free. Maybe the cost of Medicare is so minuscule as compared to his monumental salary that it would feel like free to him, but it's not free to those of us who carry this nation on our backs. No, no, not at all. it's a little bit gratifying to see a piece like this and a sentence like this. The right has built vast networks of think tanks, newspapers, periodicals, cable news channels, and political advocacy organizations to spread their finely tuned, well-honed messages. Interesting, however, that this writer did not mention talk radio. Because, in fact, that has been as much or more than anything else the game changer in this country. And that, more than anything else, is the failing of the Democratic Party and progressive movements and liberal organizations in not countering that. Now, is it Citadel, I think I saw? Yeah, maybe a Wall Street Journal posting. Citadel Broadcasting's going belly up, bankrupt. What a brilliant moment if some deep pockets liberal consortium could go in there and squirrel that bankruptcy deal. Because, you know, there are laws that you can use to squirrel a bankruptcy. For instance, let's say Citadel wants to hang on to all of its stations. Theoretically, at least, a liberal consortium could go in and take Citadel away. Because I remember when the very same thing was done to working people just 30 or 40 miles west of me. When an entire coal company went bankrupt and listed pensions and salaries and health care. Its very most precious resource, its human labor pool, were listed as liabilities and swept from the board. Like so much sawdust off a killing room floor. I remember that. There is a way for us to take some of this back, and we do have to come to terms with the fact that we are dealing now with opinion makers and not journalists. It's been with us for a long, long time. For years and years and years, it was Paul Harvey just quietly working his right-wing magic out there with that folksy BS good day. And now you know the rest of the story, as Bart Kopp calls him, the old horse molester. And people just said, oh, he sounds so friendly. And every day, day in and day out, it was hucksterism for some corporate sponsor with neatly shrouded right-wingism wrapped around it. And the left didn't respond. And Rush rose up. And the left didn't respond. And what else? Oh, I don't know. Rush got even bigger. And the left finally did, the so-called liberals finally did respond. And how did they respond? They responded during the Clinton administration by relaxing the media ownership rules so that the people who were carrying Rush could add more right-wingers by owning more stations in more markets. And the next thing you go, no, you got Rush, you got Michael the Savage Wiener. You've got that guy from Mutual overnight, Jim Bohannon. And then it just turns into a massively replicating virus of Laura Ingraham's and Bill O'Reilly's and Sean Hannity's and Neil Bortz's. And then the Christians figured it out. The Christians. And they started buying up little radio stations that were meant to provide low-power FM communications for small communities so that there could be some sort of interaction on the airwaves. But the phony, evangelical, right-wing Christian organization snapped those up, and now they broadcast out of some satellite uplink station in Idaho all across the country with the same right-wing message of hate day in and day out and 24 hours a day. How did we miss out? How did this happen? I mean, I remember when Rush was Rush was first catching on. I happened to be working in an office where the receptionist listened to him at her desk every day. "I just think he's wonderful," she'd say. I'd look at her and say, "Are you out of your mind? He's a fascist." And she'd look at me and say, "A what?" And there was nothing to counter him. And when I would talk to somebody, and I used to talk to people like this, I'd say, "You know, what about that guy? Why isn't there somebody out there that's opposing this freak?" And of course, there were, in limited pockets. Mike Malloy's been around since 1986 or so. But it's always been a struggle. Michael Jackson was terribly, terribly erudite out in Los Angeles. And for a while he was on the ABC Talk Radio Network. I know it because I ran his program when I was the program director at a little station in Tuscumbia, Alabama. It's the little city with scum in the middle. And Michael would come on and he would excoriate Ronald Reagan. His numbers weren't real good in Tuscumbia, Alabama, Michael Jackson's weren't. But there was no overall sense that we needed to either respond to or counter someone like Rush Limbaugh, because when you would talk to someone about it, they'd say, "Oh, we don't want to be like him. We don't need someone else on the other side doing what he's doing. Oh, dear God. I mean, can you imagine the people that listen to him?" And I remember looking at him one time and saying, "Yes, voters!" Yeah, you get the idea. Folks responding on my Facebook page to the There Is No Spoon column. "This not only sends chills down my spirit, but also serves to dash any hopes on the rocks. We can't organize billions to buy PR campaigns from the same group that conservatives use." And that's the whole point. We don't use the same groups that conservatives use. We build those groups. Starting on the day after the humiliating defeat, the landslide defeat of Barry Goldwater in 1964, the right wing said, "Someday we will have our revenge." And they began building. And you're living that dream of revenge right now. We have never had such an impulse. We've always thought that, well, you know, our ideas are better. And idea, you know, in the marketplace of ideas, the better idea will always win out, Muffy darling. But it doesn't work that way. When the marketplace of ideas is no longer a free marketplace, but is in fact some sort of captive carnival ride, some sort of captive trip down this hall of mirrors, carnival midway where all the games are rigged, then the best ideas don't win out. The loudest ones do. And the difference between us and the other side in terms of loudness is the squeaking of a mouse versus the trumpeting of an elephant. We don't even approach, given the symbology involved, we don't even approach the noise of a braying ass. And here we sit. So, you know, this is not Slit Your Wrist Friday. This is Friday on the front porch. And if you've got something to add to this, I want to hear about it. I want to explore this with you. I want us to process on this, because there is a fundamental difference between right-wingers and liberals/progressives. And that is that we actually think about stuff. You know, the essay, the There Is No Spoon essay from Daily Coast is proof that we think about this stuff. Jesus, there's 1,400 responses to that essay. I didn't even try to read them. Some disagreeing, some agreeing, yeah, whatever. But that tapped into something with 1,400 people on Daily Coast. And it moved them to offer some sort of an observation. Which means that there is some level of existential reality that is embodied inside that essay. Which I find telling. Oh, by the way, just in case you're curious, if you haven't been reading along, when the writer says, give us a little money to test some things out and we can work magic, our business is persuasion and we're very good at it. Just watch PBS Frontline series, The Persuaders, and by all means do, to get just a small inkling of what you're up against. And then says, we can make a company that earns a 38% gross profit margin manufacturing purely proprietary products seem hip, cool, and progressive. There's a link. And I had not linked on it until a few minutes ago because I had a theory of what company he was talking about. And lo and behold, it was confirmed when I opened the link and it said Apple Inc., NASDAQ, AAPL. How did I know? How did I know? But the other things are so true, too. For a little coin, we can make poor people hate inheritance taxes. What else can you make poor people do? You can make poor people vote for rich people who hate poor people. I watch it happen every 2 years here in West Virginia when people who have been told from the pulpit, there's another one, who have been told from the pulpit that they won't get into heaven if they vote for one of them abortion candidates. Jesus, I saw it happen a few years ago when we had a perfectly moderate Democratic member of the Senate from Beckley, West Virginia, who got run because a seventh grade dropout, I'm not kidding, a seventh grade dropout papered every car, every windshield at every church in Raleigh County with a flyer that was illegal. Because it didn't say who had produced the flyer, and it was election materials. Papered every windshield of every car in every church parking lot in Raleigh County with a flyer that was illegal that said, so-and-so hates little babies. So-and-so supports abortion. Jesus hates abortion, and so does Russ Weeks. That's another one of those things that probably got me removed from the air in Beckley because I took to referring to him as Russ Weeks-minded. I mean, the guy was so goddamn dumb, you had to wonder if he had the sense to put his pants on before he left in the morning. Mercifully, he was removed from the Senate in the next election and replaced by a corporatist Democrat who torments dogs for a living and supports mountaintop removal. Man, that's progress. But that's okay. The seventh grade dropout supported mountaintop removal, too. But he spent his 4 years in office doing what? Trying to create conspiracy theories because they banned smoking at a state hospital. And talking about the poor little fetuses. He saw no contradiction in that. But you can see it anywhere you look. And that line, I just love that. Talking about the health care message campaign, what we had were labor unions and the AARP delivering generic, hopeful messages without an ounce of the power or creativity that one might find in a random Budweiser ad. You know, the right wing doesn't have a lock on creativity. In point of fact, the right wing is not creative. Look at the creative energies that have gone into the horn. Look at that beautiful print that people are buying that Diane came up with the idea for on her own and came to me and said, hey, Bob. And everybody who's received one of those thus far has said, holy smokes, this is beautiful. This is wonderful. All the creative energy is present, not on the mountain removing side of the debate that I'm involved in, but on the side opposing mountain removal. Look at the creativity and the thousands and thousands of dollars that went into that Greenpeace campaign yesterday with cars and blaring sirens and painted green and crime scene tape around the headquarters of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. It is not the lack of creativity. It is not the lack of energy. It is, in fact, the lack of goddamn direction. I mean, do you see it differently? Because of the nature of what I'm involved in, and I'm not trying to aggrandize in any by any means what we do here at the Horn. But I pay attention to this kind of thing. I pay attention to how we keep losing. And I see why we keep losing, and I'm in agreement with this diarist at Daily Kos. Organizations that I work with, I look at them and I say, oh my God! You have got to start working with the opinion people! And I get, well, we've done pretty good getting our message out. To who? I mean, it is astonishing, and it is stirring, and it's exciting, and it's inspiring that German television and Norwegian television and Swedish television and Swiss television and the BBC and French television and German have all been over here to see mountaintop removal. But we can't get Rachel Maddow down here. Or Keith Olbermann. Oh, they talk about a story here and there, but they have never seen it for themselves. And when you're dealing with an issue like this and you realize that you're literally explaining how to turn a light on, you realize exactly how much work you have to do. This person, I want to say guy because I'm a sexist, because I'm a guy. This diarist is correct. Because I've seen it in action. I've seen what happens when, for instance, I try to sit down and watch a Mountaineer football game and am bombarded. When it's on anything but ESPN, am bombarded by ads from Massey Energy saying that, and their tagline is this, Massey Energy. We work here. We give here. Because we live here. And it's got helicopter flyover shots of beautiful, autumn leaf-clad mountains. Not a flyover shot of the brushy fork toxic waste impoundment. Or Marsh Fork Elementary School. And the toxic waste impoundment over it. And it's Massey Energy provides everything from scholarships to help students in college to playground equipment for our youngins at their elementary schools. And, you know, the Mountaineer games come on at like 1 o'clock in the afternoon, so it's, you know, I haven't even gotten into beer number one, so I'm just painfully sober. And I'm watching it with my little head in my hands going, Jesus Christ, we don't have a prayer against this. And so I start talking to a few people here and there, and I say, God Almighty, we have got to counter this. No matter how little we do, we have to do something. because we cannot cede a single field of battle to those rotten bastards on the other side. And I get, well, we don't have the money. And I understand we don't have the money. We have to go and find it. We have to present the urgency of changing the message and challenging the message in the same space that these rotten bastards are occupying. I don't know that that's the best use of our funds. Hope I'm not pissing anybody off. But it's monumentally frustrating. Because that's not, you know, that's not just the issues that I work with. It doesn't matter. It's healthcare. It's the war in godforsaken Afghanistan. It's questions of infrastructure development and jobs. And we do have people who have the power to raise amazing amounts of money. And then they blow it. Look at that little piece of Greenpeace theater yesterday. Did you see that over at thinkprogress.org? Did you go and look at it? Did you see the fully functioning ambulance? With the dark green paint job and the dark green climate police cars and the sirens and the... That had to cost something. You know, I remember when World Can't Wait Drive Out the Bush regime would raise enough money to put a full-page ad in the New York Times. And then they'd put out press releases about putting out full-page ads in the New York Times. And I'd be sitting there scratching my pointy little head going... Wow, I'm guessing they don't get a whole lot of they don't circulate a whole lot of the New York Times in busted knuckle. We have to figure out a way to be pervasive. You know, I remember at Netroots Nation when Guy James came out of one of the seminars about media, and it's not often because the guy tells me that once upon a time he had a horrible, horrible temper, but he has worked. To make it better, and that he has learned to control it. But I saw him come out of this meeting at Netroots Nation purple in the face, because whatever it was that was the overarching issue that was being discussed, Guy was sputtering. A guy was dumbstruck. He was doop, like that. I mean, like me. You know, when Guy talks, Guy goes on and chooses his words, and he's mellifluous and beautiful and wonderful and amazing to listen to. And I get behind this microphone and spend half of 3 hours a night just spitting on the windscreen. So it was with some concern. I said, Guy, what's going on in there? And he just shook his head, and that voice of God, if they ever do the Ten Commandments again and they don't hire Guy James to do the voice of Almighty God, the casting director should just be shot. Bob, we're screwed. They don't get it. What do you mean, Guy? I just sat in there and they talked about how important it was that they get their message out. And I asked them, well, what are you doing to work with liberal opinion makers? What are you doing to work with liberal TV and liberal radio? And Bob, and the hand comes out. You know, Guy's a little bit bigger than I am. The hand comes out and rests with that sort of, you know, that Midwestern, you know, friend, let me talk to you for a minute. Just rests on my shoulder and he says, Bob, they told me they didn't need old-fashioned media because they have blogging. And then I understood. whatever the main issue was, and it wasn't necessarily about media, there was an overarching issue, and then there was a talk about how, you know, how we manipulate the message. And I forget whatever that issue was, but whatever that issue was, I knew right then and there that it was done. Because they were going, no offense to bloggers. I mean, this post over at Daily Coast is brilliant. And here I am sitting here talking about it. But I'm talking about it because I'm trying to get it comprehended on a wider basis. Because 1,400 responders at Daily Coast is pretty darn cool. But it's not the 50,000 you can reach with a 60-second ad, or the million you can reach with a 60-second ad. It is a whisper into a megaphone instead of what Walt Whitman called a barbaric yawp. But I knew, and I understood why Guy James was purple in the face, and why he was shaking his head like, you know, I can't get that, you know. Daggum new puppy, I can't get it. Quit chasing cars and it's going to come to no end. No good end at all. Because there's not a damn thing you can do about it. So there, wow, where did that hour go? Sorry, I think I just filibobstered. Don't you guys have the common decency to break me up during one of these things? You know the phone number, right? Right. 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on. Or on your nickel, 304-658-3333. Email comes in to bobkincaid@gmail.com. Mosey on up to the front porch. That's what these Fridays are for, dadgummit. Right? Right. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice.
One, two, three.
This is the horn.
Quit school when she was 17. Senator on TV calls her welfare queen. Used to be daddy's little girl. Now she needs help in this mean old world. Buys cassette tapes in the bargain bin. Loves Carlene, Carter, and Loretta Lynn. Tries to have fun on a Saturday night. Sunday morning don't shine too bright. It's welfare music. Watch the baby dance to the welfare music. Will she ever stand a chance? Fall down Baby, get up. Baby needs a drink from a loving cup. It's welfare music. Watch the baby dance.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. You know, I went through that... I went through that whole that whole hour there. And you'll forgive me if the whole time I had on my mind, bless his heart and peace be upon him, Bill Hicks and his whole rant about marketing. I'm not going to run it. Because, you know, it's easy to agree with Bill Hicks in that particular piece. But the fact of the matter is we have to deal with the world we live in. And we have a world that is no longer, we have at least a nation that is no longer shaped by journalism. We have a nation that is shaped by opinion makers. And the sad thing is that, well, those opinion makers ain't necessarily something that you would want to call, I don't know, honest. At least not on the right wing side. I've never heard any left or so-called liberal talker deliver a genuine, obvious, intentional falsehood. But all you got to do is turn on you know, Fox. And there you have it. It's right there in front of you. I mean, look at this latest thing about and it's made up out of whole cloth, okay? This business that Barack Obama threatened to close off at Air Force Base if Ben Nelson didn't get in line with the health care reform. And even creepy Ben Nelson with his really ugly rug came out and said, nah, that's true, and that's not true. That's not true at all, and saying that it is the worst kind of yellow journalism. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter at all. Why do I say it doesn't matter? Well, let's see. Senator Kit Bond, Republican of Missouri. Rumors out there. We haven't confirmed it, but the rumor keeps coming back that he's threatened to close a major air base in Nebraska. It is total blackmail. It is the worst kind of Chicago politics. That's from yesterday. So is this. Senator Bob Bennett, Republican from Utah. This would be one of the most outrageous demonstrations of presidential power I've ever seen. That was published by The Hill yesterday. 20 Republican senators signed a letter, according to The Hill yesterday. We do not want to see the name of a base from our state on a BRAC list and think it has been put there to settle partisan scores. The whole thing is made up by this creepy little drudge wannabe. And any legitimate journalist could put the lie to it almost instantaneously. But we have a dearth of legitimate journalists in this country now. And instead, opinion journalists grab it and run with it. Glenn Beck, upon repeating this falsehood, said that Barack Obama had come near treason. Bear in mind that treason is the only crime that is defined within the Constitution, and treason also has a pretty well set-in-stone penalty. The Republican Party of Minnesota is having a fit on Al Franken for daring to speak back to, you know, his better, Senator Lieberman. And you'll recall, because we played the audio on the program, that John McCain said, I've been around here some 20 years, my friends. First time I've ever seen a member denied an extra minute or two to finish his remarks. I just haven't seen it before myself, and I don't like it. And I think it harms the comedy of the Senate. And oddly enough, that's C-O-M-I-T-Y, not C-O-M-E-D-Y, because it is a great, grand farce right now, the United States Senate. Not to allow one of our members at least a minute. I'm sure that time is urgent here, but I doubt that it would be that urgent. There's only one problem. And again, the opinion makers of the right wing aren't pointing this out. There are 1,000 people out there right now. There are 1,000 people, 1,000 right wingers in this country who are going with the shock and dismay of honorable war hero Senator McCain. Instead of telling the truth, and the truth is this, it comes from October 10th, 2002, when the Senate was ramming the war authorization from Iraq down the American people's throats. And the floor debate was fast and furious. And Senator Mark Dayton, a Democrat from Minnesota, spoke up in favor of an amendment that Senator Robert Byrd had offered that would have restricted George Bush's constitutional powers to wage war against Iraq. Mark Dayton had a minute and a half. This is what happened. The senator's time has expired. Senator Dayton. I ask for unanimous consent that I have 30 seconds more to finish my remarks. Senator McCain. I object! But Senator McCain has never in his 20-some-odd years in the Senate seen anything like what Senator Franken did to poor little mealy-mouthed, butter-wouldn't-melt-in-his-mouth Joe Lieberman yesterday. And for the minutes that I've spent laying that fact out because of the overt failures of the liberals, progressives, and other Democrats to build the network to respond to that kind of filth, leaving it to the likes of Mike Malloy to do this on his own, him and Kathy, the likes of the Horn to struggle from day to day to survive, of Guy James, of John Fox, all of us, leaving it to us to do it ourselves because, you know, it's talk radio. And so as a consequence, for however many minutes that I just talked about John McCain, there are 1,000 times that many minutes that are talking about the outrage of Senator Franken and his unprecedented refusal to allow poor little Senator Lieberman to speak for another pissant 30 seconds. Begin to get the picture? Yeah. Me too. It's one thing to get beat because you did your best and you gave your best. It's another thing to get beat because you went out there and you weren't prepared to win. You can't fault those who give their best and do their best. But those who go out and aren't prepared to win and yet expect to win, yeah. What the piece said at Daily Kos, fools. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, this is Grant from Portland.
Well, hey, Grant, how are you?
I'm doing all right. Tell you what, filibuster Bob.
No, I've got my own word, Grant. It's a filibobster.
A filibobster, that's right. Does my $5 help get you a bigger megaphone or what? Not much, but we're getting there. Hey, you know what? I think I have to, you know, tip the hat to Dave from Maine on this subject. I think the expectation that a brie eater is going to come to your rescue is a premeditated resentment in this case. I just don't think they're going to be there ever. And it turns my stomach every time I hear them get together for wine and cheese on a cruise. And they could just save some of the money and pump it out to Mike Malloy, Bob, you know, John Fox, any of these guys, and actually keep you going or help you, heaven forfend, expand. And I just don't think they're going to be there. I think we're just going to have to do this completely on our own.
Well, so far, that's what we've been left to do. But Grant, I mean, are you telling me that there is not a single solitary soul out there beyond the people who are willing to keep this going?
I'm not really sure what to think anymore. I know what I'm willing to do. I know what I can do every month. I'm looking at if a couple of deals go through in the next year or 2 years, I'll be in better shape to do something more. But that's just me. From what I hear outside, I'm not getting a lot of support. You know, I hear Milankovitch quite a bit too. You know, they go to people with the cash and they just can't seem to reach their checkbook for some reason.
And
just can't quite get there.
Is it institutional bias, Grant, do you think? Is it a class thing? I think it's a class thing to a certain extent. I've heard examples of that. But is it also a turf thing? I mean, what, you know, okay, I'm going to get myself in trouble. Look at Move On.
Remember, we got to sell butt cream now.
No, I know. Look at Move On. They have just raised $1 million to campaign against Joe Lieberman.
Okay.
Now, if you're reading any of the sort of deep think stuff out there, you'll see that there are some fairly intelligent people who are saying that Joe Lieberman is not the problem. And frankly, I'm of the opinion that Joe Lieberman will not run for re-election. He's going to cash the check. But there's $1 million out there for running ads against him. And I know that I made, you know, media a part of my overall gripe. But
Do I sense another Save the Gray Baby, Gray Gay Whales coming, you know, the donation pitch coming on here? Is this what I'm feeling?
No, no.
I get about 30 of those a week.
No, but I mean, no. That's not my point. But what I'm saying is, you know, there are organizations out there that have the wherewithal to build this infrastructure. And it's not class-based, and I can only think that it's turf-based, because they are otherwise not interested. Because, you know, you call in, you listen, there are lots of people who listen to this program. I never get emails saying, Jesus, Bob, you suck, get off the air. And I know Mike gets the, you know, weird right-wing crap, but, you know, you expect that of them.
Uh-huh.
There's programming out there, whether it's me, Mike, the Horn, Guy, John, or you know, the likes of Tom, Stephanie, Randy, you know, the whole bunch. Everybody acknowledges that it's good radio.
I've heard some weird things, though, about the different factions within the, what should I call it, the big tent that is the Democratic thing.
Oh, without a doubt, you know.
Yeah. And I definitely get the impression that there's some real skunks in the works, man, with these people. I mean, they're just, I wouldn't exactly go as far as calling them moles, but they operate, and they seem, it's like anything that's really changed or progressive or mainstream-ish, they're just sort of pushed out of the way.
Well, I mean, you know, look, you can go to, like, Democratic Underground, Grant, and uh-huh. you can get, if you post about me or about anybody else, you'll get, you know, you'll inevitably get a concern troll who says, you know, well, I just don't like him. You know, he's too harsh.
Too controversial.
Well, and certainly that's the excuse that a lot of advertisers use for the folks who are working on terrestrial or satellite radio. Man, it's too much controversy. We don't want our product associated with controversy. But within our own camp, Grant, everybody's not going to like everything. You know, take for instance Bill Press. Bill Press is liberal. But he is the far more mild. You know, there are a lot of people out there that liked Alan Colmes when he was getting bitch slapped every night by Sean Hannity. But because they just thought that, you know, he was, you know, he's our kind of liberal. And that's fine.
That's the thing. When I'm confronted with a bully, I want to break his knees. I don't want to be bitch slapped by him.
Yeah, right.
You know what I'm saying? But that's who I am. That's just me, I guess. In fact, I couldn't believe it. I mean, Colmes made my stomach turn. I can't stand to see somebody.
But you can see where somebody he would appeal to somebody.
I suppose.
I mean, there's this is a big enough country that there's a demographic for everyone.
Yeah, sure.
And it, you know, what's frustrating is that, and it's not just talk radio, but by virtue of the fact that this post at Daily Coast mentioned everything but. You know, I tend to see, having seen what right-wing talk radio did to the body politic, I can't help but think that coming at it from the left or you know, whatever you want to call it, liberal, progressive, whatever, that there's got to be a place for it with us as well. I mean, my God, Ben Burch has managed to keep the White Rose Society up and running since 2002, and that's strictly on a donated basis. You know, no, Ben wasn't getting paid. Ben's never been paid for White Rose Society.
Mm-hmm.
But there's, you know, am I making any sense?
Getting there, yeah.
Okay, trying. You know, our buddy Marty just chimed in and said, Alan Colmes was the Fox News version of the Washington Generals. You remember the team that played the Harlem Globetrotters?
Yeah. Exactly right. Wah, wah, all the way, yeah.
But...
yeah, I got it. No, I'm so frustrated about it. I've been thinking about this, but only off and on, because I've been busy with local concerns. But there's got to be a way for us to build some kind of consortium of independence where the network doesn't take all the cash, everybody gets paid, the lights stay on at minimum, and everybody gets to keep doing what they're doing, you know, at minimum.
Yeah.
And we just can't seem to get there, you know, without a little nudge.
That's because...
it's not cash, is what I'm saying.
Well, frankly, Grant, that's because I don't think anyone's invented the model. Right-wing talk radio was out there, and it subsists on grants from these think tanks and so forth. Anybody who thinks, as I've noted before, anybody who thinks that Rush Limbaugh's ads for vacuum cleaners that pick up bowling balls and herbal erection concoctions are sufficient to pay him $40 million a year plus bonuses is significantly lost in the weeds, okay?
Yeah, I hear you on that one.
So, you know, there's a lot of under the table money, there's a lot of side circuit money, if you will.
Sure.
And we don't have any of that. But that was the model, that vacuum cleaners that pick up bowling balls thing, and by gold now, was the model that was applied to liberal talk radio. Because it was the working model for the right wing, and I don't know, maybe it's a path of least resistance thing for marketing people.
Well,
for the radio station Herb Tarlitz of the world.
Well, yeah, but for Christ's sake, I mean, how many millions did they drop on Hannity before he turned one dime? That's the difference. You don't have that deep pocket support to get you out there and spread around. What I would like to suggest something, Ben. Tell you what, I've been looking into different corporate models.
Right.
And the thing that I'm impressed with right now is a Mondragon style cooperative, okay, with a bcorporation.net sort of internal imperative that gives you your triple bottom line to quadruple bottom line. It's a really good structure, and if you can get something like that amongst the independent broadcasters, I think you've got something. The trick is how to get there from zero. That I don't know how to do.
And that's all. It's always, the birth process is always the tough part.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You can get through toddler and you know, knocking over the furniture stage, but it's the birth process that's really the hardest. You know, and we've seen it, for instance, in the creation of Air America.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Air America went out there with a bunch of money, and the first thing they did was, you know, bought space in New York City, and they were going to be headquartered in New York City.
Yeah.
When it's obvious that a startup, it can't operate like that. Then there was that women's network, and I don't say that with any degree of misogyny or anything like that. It's called Greenstone Media, and they started out with Gloria Steinem money and Jane Fonda money and Oprah money. Okay, I mean, you know, real Jed Clampett walking around money.
Okay.
And they went out and got a building and hired executives, and then they thought, you know, and they got them some marketing people. You know, maybe we need somebody who knows how to talk behind a microphone.
Now that we have all the trappings, we're
and they didn't, and they and Grant, they didn't make it a year.
Yeah, I wouldn't imagine that spend rate. You know, what are you going to do with that? So you know what I think is really cool, and you might want to consider. Although I don't know what you're going to do. I tell you what, one thing I did like about the Ed Schultz show. Every Friday, we would have a recession busters where just local businesses would call in, and they get their start or get out there or do something just with the product there or the service they're making or whatever. It seems like that could be something if it's worked into advertising in some way. Because they're already on the same page politically. They're doing their own thing. They're doing their entrepreneurial thing. And they just need an outlet for their stuff. Now, you don't have the millions and millions and millions and millions, and you don't have a big backer like that. But to me, it just seems like it wouldn't be a waste to start someplace. I'm just throwing stuff out because I want to help.
Sure.
I don't know if it's going to be a fit. But things like that, I think eventually it's be a center of economic activity, and that might help.
Well, and you know, this whole discussion isn't necessarily about the horn. It's about the overarching problem of why we keep finding ourselves, where are we going and why am I in this handbasket?
Yeah.
Because, you know, I mean, the diarist is right. There has been an abject failure to advance what it is we say we want in the healthcare debate. There has been an abject failure in advancing the message into the living rooms of what is left of middle-class America on the Afghan war. Although I think the Afghan war may be a little bit different because 80% of the country doesn't want to be there anymore. But Barack Obama said, we're going to be there because his generals told him to. So, you know, maybe that's a little bit different, but there, it's that whole, you know, all revolutions, you know, it's that old premise that all revolutions that are successful begin in the middle class. And we have failed with, it would seem, even though the polling numbers, are dramatically the other way, somehow or another, we've failed to get the necessity or to communicate the, or to even identify the essential facts surrounding the healthcare debate out there. We've been drowned out by the birthers and the deathers and the tenthers and the booger eaters and, you know, just.
And at every turn, when push came to shove, these dummies brought tambourines to a knife fight.
Yes.
And we're telling them this and they would blow us off. There are conditions a certain way. I mean, that Overton window you spoke to me about.
Yeah.
You know, that's part of your brain damage right there. They have accepted, I mean, not just the corruption of the DLC and everything moves them this way. The fact that there's this, within the kabuki that is politics, they've self-identified a certain role, I think. Okay? And they just, this is out of character for me to stand up to a bully. I'm just supposed to answer his endless, you know, asinine accusation. And that seems to be what comes out.
Yeah.
I mean, did I read that wrong?
No, you didn't. No, I don't think you did.
Yeah. That's what I'm seeing, and I couldn't understand why at every single turn they weren't just in people's faces all along the way. I mean, it's been systematic. We have the systematic theft, the states not being able to defend themselves against fraud. Then when that happened back in September, you look at 40% of these books here, 40% at minimum, I was watching C-SPAN when they announced it, are fraud, right up the face of it. Turns out Bush was suppressing states' abilities to protect themselves against fraud. And it just goes on and on and on. And now they're about to pass a health insurance, quote-unquote, reform bill that is extortion under color of authority. You know what I'm saying?
And yeah, the mandate, you know, Sandra sent me some numbers earlier today that indicate rather clearly that the fact of the matter is the American people do not want anything that has a mandate attached to it.
Oh, absolutely not. Bad enough to come after us for car insurance. Can you imagine when they get us on that treadmill? We will never see a constitutional right in our lifetime.
No.
We'll be able to endlessly fund assault against whatever it is we want with this health care. We're done. Stick a fork in our ass, we're done if they pass this thing.
I don't care
what Harkin says or anybody else says. I see.
Well, see, I've been to this movie before, Grant, because I remember when a Republican Congress insisted on something that they liked to euphemistically call welfare reform. And Bill Clinton signed it into law with the thinking that, well, you know, I'll get a majority back in the Congress in whenever, and then we'll come back and fix it. It is next to impossible to come back and fix anything that has been passed by the Congress and signed into law.
Which is like the word financial innovation. As soon as you hear it, you know you're about to be robbed.
Yeah.
Exactly. So like, oh, we'll fix it later. No, we won't. Like saying, why don't you just put in a 20-year down the road trigger? About the same effect.
But even the triggers would have been BS. I mean, yeah.
In all intents and purposes, complete BS.
I mean, these numbers are quite stunning. If the public option and Medicare buy-in are added, 58% of people support the idea. The number of Republicans drops to 22%, but independent support, those beloved independents, rises to 57%, and Democratic support goes to 88%. Okay? However, the downside is that only 33% of likely voters favor a health care bill that does not include a public health insurance option and does not expand Medicare, but does require, you know, the mandate. I mean, how much clearer can that be? How much harder, how much easier to understand do we have to make this? for the Obama administration and for Harry Reid. And I'm kind of leaving the House out of this one, Grant, because they got it right.
Yeah, I agree.
But again, I put forward, and I know this sounds negative, and maybe I'll get a cranky email over it, but I'm going to repeat what I said. If this Senate bill is passed and goes to conference committee, anything that isn't this Senate bill will get killed before when it comes back to the Senate for ratification, and it will never see the president's desk.
I think so. I think it's spot on.
But you and we get it.
So this Senate can do it for him, you know. And oh yeah, you called it, man. Same process. It's the same sausage mill. Exact same variables. Exact same formula. We know what they're going to do.
I mean, you know, Ben Nelson is still waffling because he's not sure that the Senate bill is cruel enough to women. I mean, now, okay, right there. That's one of those moments, Grant. That's one of those messaging moments. Why isn't there an organization out there, and I'm not talking about the horn, and this isn't a pitch.
Yeah.
Why is there not an organization out there asking that question? How cruel to women does this bill need to be in order to get Bill Nelson or Ben Nelson's support? How misogynistic, okay, that's too big a word for the American people. How woman-hating does this bill have to be for Ben Nelson to like it?
Yeah, well, how about the voices? I'm curious.
Yeah, because there's some great work being done out there. You know, the website that I go to a lot, Think Progress, they do great work. The Campaign for America's Future does great work, but they do policy stuff, Grant.
Yeah, not theater.
And there's and I'm sorry. I mean, maybe you know. God, I hope there's no Republicans listening. There's got to be some theater involved.
Oh my, but that's the thing, man. These guys. The DLC has just sucked butt at Kabuki for the longest time. I mean, they are just pathologically incompetent at political theater. They just don't seem to be able to muster the talent like the good old days. They just don't have it. You got Harry Reid, you got Nancy Pelosi. The only people they seem to do theater to are the progressives. You know, the lure.
Yeah, because that's what we've been getting.
One more time, and then gut the fish when they get it in the boat. I mean, that's kind of how they are. They'll turn on you, and then say, "Well, do the professional hand wringer thing," and then you know you've been had again. And this is why I'm an independent, Bob. I used to be a Democrat.
I'm not surprised, and I don't blame you a bit.
I'm independent now, you know, because of exactly what happened in 2006. And all this kind of stuff.
Well, see, there's nothing stopping me from being independent because independents now can vote in either primary. It used to be only the Republicans in West Virginia allowed independents to vote in their primary, but now the Democrats do too. But if we take into account the argument of Alan from Florida from last week, that doesn't help much. You've got to register for a third party so that they know you want absolutely nothing to do with them. And that's not me telling you, but that was the argument that Alan put forward, and it had some validity.
Oh, I agree. I agree. There has to be something else out there. But I'm happy to be an independent in the state that I'm in right now.
Well, you're in a state where, yeah, it might mean something.
Yeah, it does. But, yeah, I mean, that's what I see. I'm tired of getting had. I mean, ever since Kerry, one thing after another, we're always getting had by these guys. They're not even trying, it looks like. I mean, can you possibly play the inept opponent a little more while the other side does anything possible within its, you know, grasping hand to get one up on you? I mean, it's been years of this. And it's, you know, they're pushing it to the point where government doesn't appear to have any ability to address any of the problems or needs of the citizenry. As a consequence. And so what do we get? You know, we get, when the other side's in power, we get the Ministry of Truth, and we get you know, how American are you? You don't have a sticker on your truck, buddy? This kind of stuff. Well, I mean, goddamn, before the election, they had a guy out here, you know, Vietnam vet sticker on one bumper, Obama sticker on the other bumper. People are pulling up to him, screaming at him, like he's a traitor.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I don't have to reiterate the stuff that I and my family and I went through for having an Obama sign in our yard.
Right.
It was ugly. It was hateful. It was nasty. It was things said to children. I mean, it was straight out of To Kill a Mockingbird. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I ain't Atticus.
Yeah. And that's what we get for Rwanda media, basically.
There you go.
It's Rwanda media.
But, of course, we're big enough that nobody can take the Rwanda media to task.
Of course not. They're fully sponsored.
Grant, awfully good hearing from you, my friend.
Take care, man.
Have a good weekend.
Okay, you too. Bye-bye.
Bye now. Calling from Oregon, that's our buddy Grant. And we do roll along. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hold on. Let me get off my hoverboard that I just got from the Privileged Member Club of the Horn. See, people, you need to get into that. Real quickly.
Now, all those hoverboards are so cool.
I know, but only a few people can get it. Only the first 100 people who list it. So.
I know.
What can we say about the of how the past that they've treated us? Tom Hartman makes a good moment of reflection of this, of how he and John Podesta used to be friends or associates. But when he started talking about Clinton and the failures of Obama, Podesta didn't return his calls. And there's an example of how so many people can't take criticism.
Well, wait, David. It's not just that, please, if you don't mind my saying so.
Yeah.
It's also a function of something that we've brought up on the program from time to time, and that is that with participation comes some notion of a right to control the message. In other words, if we're running ads for Campbell's Soup,
yeah,
and I'm getting paid a nice bit of money for running Campbell's Soup ads, and I find out that there's a recall on Campbell's Soup, their Manhattan clam chowder, because it has, because the chopped up minced clams in it, have hepatitis A. And I sit here and I say, well, you know, that's just another example of the corporatization of the food industry, blah, blah, blah. Well, I just lost my ad contract, so I self-censor before I say anything. But beyond that, if you establish one of those relationships where you call up Senator Thus and So's press guy and say, hey, I'd like to have Senator Thus and So on again.
Mm-hmm.
And you have this lovely relationship where you've got Senator Thus and So on every 2 weeks on a Wednesday.
Yeah.
And then you find yourself in a position where Senator Thus and So has just done something that you think is entirely screwed up. Then you're in a position of either self-censoring and not being straight with your audience, or you say what's on your mind, and the next thing you know, that door at Senator Thus and So's office is closed to you and nobody picks up the phone again. And that's the price of access. You know, if you want to rub elbows and have political types, hey, how are you? Then you'd better by God be prepared to muzzle your own ass. Oh, okay, you can't muzzle your ass. That could be messy. But muzzle your mouth, or else you will find that you aren't rubbing elbows anymore.
I bet you Ed Schultz got a call this week for what he said about Obama on his program. He said Obama was acting like a sellout to the American people. I bet you the Obama phone.
That's pretty tough because, you know, Ed went in, what's the poker phrase? Ed went all in for Obama pretty early on.
Yeah, I know.
In the primary process against Hillary.
Well, I think what's going to happen with that is he's going to change his tune really, really fast. He's going to get that call. Hey, what the hell are you doing? Because, you know, so many people in the Obama administration cannot take criticism. I was,
No presidency can. Let's not be specific to the Obama administration. No presidency can, because just as George Washington feared, David, there is an element of royalism about the executive branch. You got to remember, at one point in time in the discussion, there was a discussion about offering George Washington the kingship of the United States.
Mm.
And bless his heart, George Washington had the decency to say, "Oh hell no."
Well, and then I think that ties into why organizations like the Horn, Mike Malloy, and so forth can't get the proper funding. If you're too forward thinking, there wants to be that sense of control.
Yes, yes, and there's a,
which goes back to a sense of,
there is also something that the machine, if you will, doesn't like, and that is the notion of being unscripted. Okay, from the comedy world, improv, if you will.
Yeah.
And that makes it even harder to control. You know, I mean, it's like the presidential debates. Before a presidential debate happens between the two parties' nominees, they know every question that's going to be asked.
Right.
And every response has been thoroughly focus grouped and thoroughly studied to see how it comes back best. The joker in the deck, of course, is the fact that massive corporations own the network airwaves, and consequently, their commentary, again, we're back to the state we're in now, where it ain't journalism anymore, it's opinion.
Yeah.
And what you'll get is, you know, I can't believe the disrespect that Al Gore showed to poor George W. Bush when he rolled his eyes and sighed. That man clearly does not have the temperament to occupy the White House.
Mm.
I mean, I remember when that happened, David. Do you? I mean, it really went down. It really went down that way. And so, consequently, no political type likes to answer a question that he doesn't know is coming. And what's more, he or she is always going to be careful about how it's going to be massaged or manipulated later. And the problem arises out of the fact that most of the so-called mainstream, what we call for-profit media, is right tilted at the very least, or outright right wing in the case of, you know, people like, you know, Murdoch's outfit. And consequently, whatever you say, you can assume it is going to be held up in the worst possible light. I mean, God Almighty, when right-wingers like Newt Gingrich were responding to the Afghanistan speech by saying, "Oh, yeah, that was pretty presidential. Well, that's a very important speech for him. It shows he understands the national security current concerns of the country." Yep, they actually said that kind of stuff. What did Fox do? They brought out porn stash Bolton to say that, well, I think he's rather juvenile in thinking that we're nothing but, in thinking that there's ever going to be a time when we aren't violent as human beings. I think this president clearly is in over his head and doesn't understand the nature of the process in which he's involved. It's a dangerous world. What the? He just said he was going to go over there and kill Afghans for all he was worth. What do you want?
Yeah, I think that's the nature of political culture and business and selling the right wing and selling it to the American people. And I think part of the problem is that I guess we need to show a sense of, the progressives need to show a sense of having a serious, marketable or commercial brand. And I guess it's starting to build right now, which was, I said, a lot of people said, well, Ed Schultz isn't a liberal. And, well, I guess so. They're not liberal, but the point is it starts from somewhere. I mean, if you went back to the 50s and 60s and you looked at who conservatives on who TVs or TV shows or who, when they were guesting on their own opinions, they wouldn't be labeled conservatives either. I guess that's what I'm saying. And the door is slowly opening, and it all comes down to how much time do we have. I don't think anyone can really predict how much time we have as a nation to get our voice heard. I think all we can do is just continue to build what we have, and hopefully someone will come and contribute and be a and set up a foundation or something for a lot of organizations.
Well, I think you're headed in the right direction, David, because while we have great organizations out there that have begun to catch up with the Cato's and the Heritage Foundations and so forth, in the form of, you know, Think Progress and Campaign for America's Future, organizations like that, we still do not have anyone, maybe Media Matters exists to shine a light on right-wing media monstrosities, but we don't have that central media clearinghouse, I guess, I don't like that word, that is focused on how to create liberal journal opinion that can viably compete with the right-wing noise machine. That thing doesn't exist yet.
Yeah, but I also think there's a misconception that a lot of people think. I mean, from my generation and other there is a cutoff point for people who listen to radio, and it's dwindling fast. I mean, it goes back to, you know, podcasts, and there has to be this certain allotted amount of time for certain shows and certain people out there. And when you don't have that allotted time, when you have a show that's going on for 3 hours at a time, I know so many people who are in ADD world, they can't take it. And that's like, I guess the perfect example of ADD world is Twitter. That's the world we really live in. I mean, I would like to see a world where would have more conversation and more discussion and more dialogue. So I guess what I'm saying is opinion is getting even more truncated as we speak. And that goes for, and liberals are going to have to find a way to, I don't know, like Huffington Post, they kind of drudgified their website, if I could use that as a word. And that's, it's true, that they used a template. I mean, you can argue all you want. That's what they did. You can probably ask the website creator, and they said, yeah, we did look at Drudge. But what I'm saying is that that's the world we live in. We live in a seriously hyper-attention deficit world, and the words are going to have to be truncated. They're going to have to be shortened. And we're going to have to somehow find those mascots. And that's the problem with there can't be those type of opinion pieces that I read in the on Common Dreams that are like 3 pages. I know, because I post these on message boards, Bob, and they put up a picture of Colin Powell. I don't know if you know this, but they put up a picture of Colin Powell, and it says, I'm not going to read all this shit. And that's pretty much, I mean, these are smart people, but they only have a patience for such a little bit of...
Well, yeah, and that's, you know, usually I have learned that, you know, generally speaking, the word limit is about 700 to 900 for, you know, whether it's Alternet or Common Dreams or some of the other places. And you can't go past that. You know, frankly, they published Joe Bagent. But he sort of earned his right to be there. Alternet does, but you know, a 5,000-word piece from Joe, or that'll get published. But a 3,000-word piece from Bob, forget it.
Another thing that's really important in the branding process of this, and it's not discussed enough, is there does need to be that youth element of a lot of opinion journalists, like Max Blumenthal, and even younger. I hate to say it because the way our cultures work and the way it's set up, we've been Taylor Swifted to death, Jonas Brothered to death, and we do want those fresh kid faces. And when they turn 18, that's what we want.
And that's true, David. And Max Blumenthal is a really good example because he does great work. But if we're going to talk about this particular medium that you and I are conversing over right now, I'll tell you. You know, I have done straight journalism, okay?
Yeah.
I've done that kind of thing, you know, where I've done the just the facts, ma'am, news anchoring on the radio. That's where I kind of started.
Yeah.
On the other hand, however, you can do that, you know, if you're 23 years old, you can do that.
Right.
I did. You know, you write your little newscast, and it's facts and not opinions, and, you know, just straight-up reporting. And at 23, as long as you can get the facts in front of you straight, you're all right. You can do that. But you know what? I'll be the first one to tell you. At 23 years old, I could not have done what I'm doing now. Because I think that the cutoff for being able to do this medium is about 35. That's about as young as you can go. Because it takes, and I'm not being a geezer about this, but there is, you know, maybe somebody who's just absolutely brilliant and just touches books and absorbs them, or touches the computer screen and absorbs the content out of the piece that he or she is looking at. Maybe that person can do it. But generally speaking, it takes a little while to build up that quantum of knowledge and information. And you see it both on the right and the left.
I understand what you're saying, but I wasn't just talking about radio. I was talking.
Oh, I know. That's why I differentiated.
Oh, okay. Well, what I'm saying is there needs to be a serious, more aggressive recruiting. And if Huffington Post was smart, they would sign someone like Cassie as soon as she gets to college, and put her.
Yeah,
right
but
on.
How much can somebody who's in college really do? Because if you're going to take college seriously. You're going to be somewhat time challenged.
Well, I understand what you're saying, but I would counter that with the fact that there are a lot of people who write a lot of intellectual and verbose posts on a lot of these blog press that are just sitting there, and Huffington Post and a lot of these people aren't picking them up. A lot of these
very true. And yeah. You know, where Cassie's concerned, we'll just use her as an example.
Yeah.
Where Cassie is concerned, perhaps the best way to look at this is to say, with any luck at all, the model will have evolved enough by the time that by the time that she graduates that she can find a paying job doing this. You know, again, whether it's blogging or this or anything else, somewhere along the way, somebody has to be able to pay the bills.
I understand what you're saying, and that brings, you know, an interesting point of. I don't know if you've been paying attention with the whole McClatchy debacle, but they're underwater right now.
And that's such a damn shame because they've done some of the last real good journalism.
Right. And again, that goes back to, okay, why is it that a lot of progressives and a lot of people who have this additional income and additional resources and additional wealth, for example, I hate to say this, but Al Gore's partner, who the venture capitalist was Tom Perkins, his yacht was named Maltese Falcon. And it was like a $150 million yacht. And then right before he was to get into the green world, Al Gore said, hey, you got to sell this yacht. And I guess what I'm saying is we have all of these additional resources, additional wealth that are just sitting there that nobody really uses. And it could be used to fund for our infrastructure. And that's a problem. I mean, so many progressives have been spoiled. So many Democrats have been spoiled. And that brings to what I was, what Wall Street Journal brought up today, which was a lot of Republicans. I don't know if you read this, Bob, but a lot of Republicans and Democrats, this is sickening. They went to Edinburgh in Scotland and they just were treated with royalty. But the thing that was really funny was one of the Blue Dog Democrats who was constantly, who was in Scotland, who was treated with the golf courses, just everything. He had $1,500 cookies. He has on his website, for God's sake, his HouseGov website, he has a debt clock on there. So, again, we're dealing with this kind of spoiled attitude and nature, and it needs to be taken down a peg. And this money needs to be redirected somehow. I don't know how we get that message out, but there's so much money, Bob. I hate to say it, but it's true. It's true, people. There is so much money that is being wasted on the progressive side. It's like a cancer. It's just sitting there. They're not doing anything with it. They're just spending it on themselves.
Well, I think some of that very definitely goes on. David, good conversation. I'm going to roll on. Got a whole bunch of lines stacked up here.
All right, Bob.
All right. Take care.
All right, later.
Bye now. That's our pop culture correspondent, David, calling from Maine. On we go. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello? 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 Not even a busy signal. Okay. Keep moving. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. It's Preston.
Hey, Preston. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I just reposted the article that you had published by Yes Magazine.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you very much.
Yeah, on my Facebook page. Great job with that. I was really pleased to learn that you had connected with them, that they discovered the work you're doing.
I had some great help from a very, very good friend in that regard, and that is our buddy Jeff Biggers, who sort of got that door open, and I really, really appreciate him doing it.
Excellent. Networking. We need more of it for sure. Well, I just heard Al Gore mentioned, and I recently got to know some of Al Gore's work a little bit better. I'm a fan of what he's done in the past, and I think progressives have a lot of very legitimate criticisms of the guy. But on the positive side of his ledger of work is a book he wrote called The Assault on Reason.
Yes, yes.
Do you remember that one from a couple of years ago?
Very, yes, and very, very sound and very sane and very true.
Yep. Radical in some ways. I was surprised at how, you know, kind of really getting to the nitty gritty of, you know, the corporate propaganda and the public relations industry and all that stuff. And, you know, he's been on the receiving end of so much of the, you know, right wing hate machine. So I think, you know, he had kind of a personal motivation to look into this and try to figure out how it is that typically reasonable people can just kind of lose their minds when they start talking politics. I run into this with people close to me where, you know, typically I love them, but when they start talking politics and they've been sitting, you know, with this Rush Limbaugh narrative for a few years, it's like their brain falls out of their heads and falls into some sewer, and it just breaks my heart. And, you know, some of them have been so committed to it for so long, I think it frightens them to take an honest look at this ugly movement that they've been a part of unconsciously. And Al Gore's book, for me, listening to that, he really tied together a lot of things about psychology and the human mind, you know, all this recent research into how we can be, how vulnerable we are to being manipulated, the misdirection that they're using all the time.
Sure.
And they can, you know, they float out these superficially plausible arguments, and on a surface level, some of them can kind of make sense, and just repeat them over and over and over and over again. It's ugly. And Gore actually brought up Nazi propaganda and talked about what Joseph Goebbels said about how they manipulated people and how they could have never gotten away with it without the radio. They could have never pulled off what they did.
So, well, let me ask you this then, Preston. When a guy like Al Gore, who is listened to by a significant portion of the Democratic Party glitterati, if you will,
mm-hmm.
when he says these kind of things, do they just say, oh, yes, he's a genius. Oh, do get me another Chablis and move on? I mean, does it not sink in? Is this the Twitterification of all of us, as David argued?
That's a good question. You know, I think it lands on people's minds differently. I think some people will say that something like what you just said, you know, isn't that special, and just kind of spectate upon him, look at it, and then move on to the next thing. Others will be pissed off by it, I think.
And I think there's a third one. I think there's a third thing too, and that is this: that there's a certain portion of people who hear that and say, "Oh well, good, Muffy, he's got it under control. He's talking about it. We don't have to worry about it anymore. It'll be handled."
Hmm.
Because, you know, you mentioned how the human mind operates, and certainly this essay at Daily Coast is centered on that. And the essay, you know, one of the things that's mentioned there is that, and you just did, the human mind is an amazing thing, and it's amazingly manipulable.
Yeah.
And if people are looking for a reason not to engage on a topic, they won't.
Yeah. Well, it's like so many people you run into in West Virginia who, you know, if they have a livelihood in the coal industry, they do not want to hear what you have to say, what Gore is saying, what James Hansen's saying, what indigenous people are saying. No.
But I'm not, no. You know, but I expect that from them.
Yeah.
On our side of the debate, Preston, I'm wondering if there's a significant portion of the people who are willing to just look at an issue and because it's not their hot-button issue, just say, well, all right, that's under control.
Yeah.
It's not passivity, I don't think, Preston. It's just they don't want to focus in that direction. I mean, that's what I was talking about earlier with Grant in terms of, you know, is there a turfiness portion of this that, you know, if you're afraid that if some other medium starts to get some level of traction, that will mean that your lobster lunches dry up.
Okay. Yeah, there might be stuff like that going on, too. You know, all that competition for mailing lists and donor lists and all that kind of stuff that goes on. Hopefully here and there it can be overcome. So, I don't know. I hope other people start picking up the ball on this. Earth Island Journal, they have a big, you know, back page article on mountaintop removal. And the guy who wrote the article, I forget his name, but he was in the military for a while. Went to West Point. And, just wrote a really good piece. He's getting dual degrees right now at MIT and Harvard.
Wow.
I'll make sure to send a link or at least.
Oh, do please.
To you. So, yeah, other people are picking up the case for sure. What else? I don't know. I think some people, though, have been genuinely irritated with Al Gore. Like, some people are really tired of Jimmy Carter and what he's up to. You know, Al Gore's treatment regarding his, you know, recent book, how he was so shut out of the public discussion. You know, his more recent book, Our Choice, about all these interesting approaches to, you know, how we can be done with coal, be done with it. People keep arguing, no, we got to have Jews for our economy. We've got to have our rights. You've got to do this and that. We can have that stuff without blowing up the mountaintops. We can have that stuff without doing all the drilling and water pollution that's going on here in Colorado and Wyoming.
You mean with the Marcellus Shale?
We've got shale. And we also have huge natural gas.
Well, that's what I mean. There's a formation that's like 1,000 feet underground called the Marcellus Shale, and it's been identified as having enough natural gas to eliminate coal, frankly. But the process of reaching it is terribly, terribly water intensive.
Mm-hmm.
And interestingly, I was part of a discussion with, and I'm not name dropping here, I'm really not, but he had the information and we didn't. I was part of a discussion with Bobby Kennedy Jr. And he was talking about the fact. He said, "Look, you want to get rid of coal-fired power plants? Natural gas is it." And then said, "You know, and we transition from natural gas into wind and solar as more and more of that comes online." And it seemed incredibly reasonable at the time, and a very respectable opinion. And one of the things, and his home's in Colorado, okay, you know, same place you are,
okay.
And one of the things that he brought out is he said, "The Marcellus Shale is a massive, truly massive reserve of natural gas that's only, you know, been fairly recently identified." And he said, reaching it requires if you just do it conventionally, reaching it requires tons and tons and tons of water that is then forever ruined.
Yeah.
He said, however, and he specifically referenced Colorado and other western states, he said, if you do it like we have insisted that it be done, there's a process whereby the water loss is minimized, and the water pollution is minimized, and you're basically recycling the same water over and over and over again.
That's an important point.
But what he went on to say is that here in the East, we don't have either the political will or the knowledge or whatever to insist that that process be what is used in going forward with it. And there's a realpolitik thing involved here, and that is, and maybe I recognize it because I live in what Governor Joe Manchin calls the resource state. Funny, we thought we were the mountain state, but no, we're the resource state.
Oh boy.
And that is that natural resources extractors will have their way because they bought off the legislature years ago, and the legislature in this state is at least dishonest enough to stay bought. So the question becomes one of will we use a significantly more responsible, will they use a significantly more responsible means of accessing that natural gas, or will they use the nastiest form available?
Yeah.
And if they're left to their own devices, they will naturally use the nastiest form available.
Yeah, and there are even some business interests, very narrow business interests, that would like to see water supplies decimated because, say, if they're Suez or Vivendi or one of the other private water companies, decrease supply and your product goes up in value.
Sure it does. Or, West Virginia American, or which is owned by American Water, which is owned by a German consortium with a British consortium with a German holding company or something or other, vice versa. Yeah, the fact of the matter is, when we watch what happened in Copenhagen, and Copenhagen is going to end with a whimper and not a shout of victory. I think we all know that. But I was blown away by the fact that, talk about politics makes strange bedfellows. The UK, the US, and Australia yesterday or the day before got in bed with the Saudis to encourage that clean coal technology be included in those things which are available for offset credits. And they were promptly shot down. But what I found interesting in that is that, of course, India and China weren't in bed with the US and Australia and the UK and Saudi Arabia. There's no coal in Saudi Arabia, is there?
No. Unless they're, importing it in the trunk of Hummers or something.
Yeah. So you just look at something like that and you go, why are they involved?
Yeah.
But when you see that China's not involved, and China will China makes deals with American companies where the American company has to manufacture all of its stuff in China. And it has to be like 80% for export for the first 5 years until the Chinese company can get strong enough to destroy the American company. And that would certainly be involved with any clean coal technology manufacturing equipment processes, and yet China didn't sign on with that? Could that be because China is at least savvy enough to realize that clean coal technology is a big fraud? I mean, that's the only rational conclusion that I can come to.
Yeah, I don't know. I think Saudi Arabia and China, in some places, are moving ahead with massive solar and wind projects.
They are.
And, on that issue of things like the water processes, how you don't need to, pollute so much water, you could just use it more wisely, more efficiently. I'm reading an entire book on how some businesses are doing that sort of thing. It's called Green to Gold, and it's about how if you utilize green business practices, you can, make a lot of money. And it's really fascinating. It incorporates all sorts of, real hard news about problems of lack of water, topsoil being lost, climate change, the acidification of the oceans, and on. But then they'll come back with case after case of companies that are approaching their work processes better. Things like detoxifying the pans, the pots and pans they're selling. DuPont, for example, they had a big lawsuit, and they had to pay out a bunch of money. And because of the Teflon was putting off some, possible carcinogens, Well, after a while, they got tired of the fight, and they changed the sorts of pots and pans they put out there.
They changed their process, sure.
Yep. Walmart, a company, you know, I still would never set foot in their stores, but they did some things regarding reducing their packaging, you know, and when they put their packages in their trucks, and their trucks are a lot lighter, burning less fuel. Like, they've had like 30% efficiency gains, and it has saved them millions and millions of dollars. Again, this entire book is about these very, you know, dare I say, progressive developments within the corporate structure that I think provide some hope. And, you know, it's the sort of thing going on in society that, on one hand, it inspires me. It's good to see. On the other hand, it just increases my anger towards figures like Sean Hannity, who caricature environmentalists, you know, and make them the enemy of commerce and business and the American way, and pit people against each other. It's criminal how they are.
But that's Preston. That's not just their philosophy. That's their business model.
Yeah.
And so far, they have, like you mentioned with Teflon, you know, they eventually came up with a reason to stop doing what they were corporately doing. Thus far, there has been no reason given to the right wing and the Hannitys of the world to stop doing what they're doing, because it is proving to be immensely successful.
Yeah, it is. You know, they don't have, like, the masses. They don't have a majority of the population on their side, but they understand they're good strategists in this war of ideas. And they, like with military strategy, they're like, we don't need the masses. We just need an active, enthusiastic, engaged minority to make things happen for us. And, you know, Limbaugh's getting 16 million people, plus or minus. And,
That's per week. I mean,
yeah.
Realistically, he's at about 2.5 million a day.
Yeah, yeah.
But still, that's a lot of people.
It is. It is. And, people who seem to be politically engaged. You know, I can't stand what they're doing, but, you know, they subscribe to their side's magazines. You know, they send money to grassroots media efforts and buy the books of the authors and go to the lectures and stuff like that. And
I was kind of horrified as I was reading the story of this, this utterly false business about President Obama threatening to close off at Air Force Base. One of the quotes, the one from Senator Kit Bond, where he said, you know, and bear in mind, it's, you know, even Ben Nelson said the threat was, you know, non-existent, not real, fake, you know, it's a lie. But still, that didn't stop Kit Bond from saying, it's total blackmail. It's the worst kind of Chicago politics. But guess who he said it to? He said it to WorldNet Daily.
Okay.
Guess who has their own radio network? WorldNet Daily.
Really? I wasn't aware of that. Is it an internet thing?
I guess so. I don't know. They may be on some terrestrial somewhere. I haven't, you know, I don't know. I'm not liquored up enough to go and listen.
It does take a strong shot of something.
Oh,
for 5 minutes.
Yeah, it does. I mean, you know, the stuff that the CIA uses. there's WorldNet Daily Radio.
Well, okay.
And again, that's because they get it. You know, you go to the American Family Association. They've got an internet radio network. They're even doing video. And they've got, and it's all funded on the backs of little old ladies who think Jesus will like them better, because Jesus don't want no gay marriage. So, you know, some significant portion of the Social Security check goes to the American Family Association every month.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
You know, I hate, I'm not trying to be totally negative, but I'm still kind of pleased that Oral Roberts is finally dead. It's been 3 days now. He hasn't gotten up, has he?
Well, his son is filling his shoes, I guess. So, in a sense, yeah, he's still alive. But
yeah, and he did. You know, after that whole wife texting the little college honeys and stuff thing broke, and the financial meltdown, and Richard Roberts is still not in prison.
Okay. So he had some sexual picadillos?
No, his wife was.
His wife, okay. Oh, interesting.
She was, as we say here in the hills, a rompin'.
Okay. But so that was a good example of the right wing, you know, putting out their media networks. But again, back to Al Gore, he helped to found, he was the founder basically of that current TV. And I was just watching it about a half hour ago, and they did a segment on that shamanic tradition of using ayahuasca, which I found very interesting. And they'll have moments like that where people will submit their own video pods, like a 5-minute video pod. And I don't know, Bob, maybe you know some people in your network of coal activists who can maybe put together a 3 to 5 minute video story and send it into current TV. I don't know how many people.
Oh, wow. I'm jotting that down.
That's another link I'll make sure to send you.
You know, and this is one of those ugly little Bob's ego moments, Preston. It turns out that, of all things, Green TV is on the local cable network around here.
Green TV?
Yeah.
Like Planet Green, or it's just Green TV?
I think it's just Green TV. Maybe it's Planet Green. I don't know. Maybe it's Planet Green. I think so. But Coal Country, the brilliant documentary, was running last month. And I started going in, you know, I'd go into the little convenience store or whatever to get my lottery ticket, you know, my retirement plan. And lo and behold, the clerk behind the counter said, "I saw you on TV last night."
Oh, great. He didn't want to hit you or anything, but he was excited for you, right? He wasn't, like, resentful.
That was you, wasn't it? I said, "I don't know. I didn't know we got that channel." And lo and behold, I found it, but I had several people. "I saw you on TV."
That's great.
I'm like, damn, my secret's out. Next thing you know, they'll know what I do up here. But, that was my little brush with greatness.
And I'm pretty sure it is Planet Green. I'm not sure about that.
I think you're absolutely right, yeah.
Just in the past couple of months, they started showing documentaries, really good documentaries like that. So, and I know Coal Country was going to be one of them. They did another one, I think it's called Water Life. I mean, mixing them up with the Sundance Channel, but another just incredibly important film that went on water issues and focusing on the Great Lakes region. So it's getting out there. I was at my rec center the other day for a swim, and there were a couple guys next to me in the locker, and they were talking about their new DVDs and TVs and all this stuff. And then all of a sudden the guy says, "I'm going to have to bring you by that DVD I have on the dolphins in Japan. It's called The Cove." And I don't know if you've seen that, but it's,
no.
Yeah, it's a big, kind of big dolphin slaughter that takes place each year. So I thought it was really great to see that, you know, all sorts of people are tapping into this. It's kind of I think DVDs provide a kind of alternative media at the grassroots level. You know, they're.
Yeah, especially when they're copyable and disseminatable.
Yeah. They can get passed around quite easily, very inexpensively. Definitely. There was just a big film festival here in Denver about 2-3 weeks ago, the Denver International Film Festival. And I wish I could have taken a week off of work and just gone to movies all day long, but there's so many good films. One I took a couple of friends to was called Orgasm Inc., Orgasm Incorporated.
Oh, wow.
And it's about how Big Pharma is trying to kind of manufacture an illness or disorder among women and then sell them various products.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
they started off by saying, "Wonder what happens if we give Viagra to them,"
right?
And then, they've gone from there. And you know, there are people out there with a legitimate need for these kinds of pharmaceuticals.
Yeah,
but it's the idea of manufacturing the need, which goes back to the Daily Coast piece, that I object to.
Right.
You know, the idea that as of now, we have pharmaceuticalized our ability to handle chemicals that occur naturally in the brain in the form of, serotonin.
Mm-hmm.
And so the next thing we're going to do is we're going to make it impossible to without a pill.
Right, right. And the way these, you know, the marketing of certain products often crowds out other discussions that could also heal people from various problems. For instance, this film goes into you know, huge problems. You know, a lot of women may not want to have sex because there's so many women who have been assaulted. They have this, the figure they put up is 1 in 5 or 1 in 6 women here in this country have been sexually assaulted. You know, it's going to have a traumatizing effect. You know, there are other issues involving our health and exercise and diet. You know, the psychological manipulations going on. And same with whether it's a sexual dysfunction or it's just a person's standard mental dis-ease.
Right.
You know, it goes beyond what Eli Lilly is offering us, you know.
But when you come right down to it, and I'm not excusing their conduct, all the pharmaceutical industry is doing, Preston, is picking up. Well, it's one of those law of unintended consequences things. You know, when we started letting doctors and pharmaceutical companies and lawyers advertise on the television, why does anybody think that that was going to result in anything but a net negative? So, you know, what you see in the pharmaceutical companies, you know, ask your doctor about whatever. They're just like the business as far as women are concerned, they're just picking up where Madison Avenue had heretofore left off. You know, because granted, being a guy, you know, yeah, it was Friday night, and yes, I watched the Victoria's Secret fashion show, because I'm a bad, bad person. But anyway, you know, whether it's Milan or Paris or London or New York or whatever, you know, Fashion Week comes along, and that's that week of the year where women are informed that their clothing is no longer appropriate, that they will be social pariahs if they don't take their hard-earned money and go out and spend it on clothing that they don't need and clear out their closets and give the...
Yep, and Hannah Montana is telling young girls that all the time, day in and day out.
Yeah, and so, you know, pharmaceuticals are just doing the same thing, only with our body chemistry.
Yeah.
You know, your orgasms could be stronger. If you experience an erection that lasts for 4 hours, don't run naked in the yard hollering, yay, hooray, I've got an erection that's lasted 4 hours. Come on, honey. Get to the hospital right away. They don't give a damn about you going to the hospital. They want some way that they can slip through past the Federal Trade Commission and let you know that it's quite possible that if you take Ciagra or Vialis or Vitalis or, you know, Brill Cream, that... the next thing you know, you're going to be walking around with a four-hour boner.
Yeah. And they probably factored in already the cost of, you know, settling some lawsuits. And, you know, during the day we see the ads from the pharmaceutical companies, and in the late evening hours we see the advertisements from the lawyers. You know, have you taken Vioxx? Have you taken Yaz? Have you taken this, that, the other thing? You can be part of the settlement. So, you know, it's creating suffering. It's creating these terrible side effects for so many people. And, you know, there are alternatives, you know, that people should be allowed to explore. And I'll leave you on this note. Here in Colorado, we have something of a very, very interesting movement going on. A couple of years ago, we voted to allow for medical marijuana. And, that's just kind of steamrolled. And we have about almost 100 medical marijuana dispensaries in Denver and Boulder now. And a lot of people with a lot of serious problems are now free to get these licenses and go to these stores. And then there are going to be other people, not surprisingly, who maybe aren't so disabled, but still maybe they find some pleasure in it or whatever the reason. We now have over 30,000 people who have these licenses to go into these stores and buy, you know, pesticide-free cannabis. And boy, I think that's a great development. I really do. Again, it's not for everybody. It certainly gets, you know, misused at times. I don't know. But again, just expanding our options, not putting people in cages for years on end because of growing the stuff or whatever. People are a little bit more free here in Colorado, and I think it's good to see.
I think you're right. Well, Preston, it's a wonderful Friday night conversation. I'm glad that you called in, and I thank you very kindly.
It's my pleasure, as always, Bob, and I'll send those links along to you shortly.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
You bet. Bye-bye.
Bye now. Preston calling from Colorado, and we roll along, but not there. Okay. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, what's up?
I don't know where to begin.
Sparky, right?
Where should we start?
Pick a place. I mean, you know, it's a circle. Break it somewhere.
Okay. How about Offutt? Are you aware of the history of Offutt Air Force Base?
Yeah, some of it. Isn't that among other places where a dim leader flew in his mad frenzy to get the hell out of Florida on September 11th, 2001?
Yes, I'm sure that's where he flew. But that was headquarters of the Strategic Air Command.
It absolutely is.
Way back when.
But it still is.
Well, it's called Strategic Air. Yeah, well, it's something else now. I mean, it's not SAC anymore. You know I'm an Air Force veteran, just like Lottie, and I was in SAC. I have a memory of that place when I was in Guam in 1974. We had it called the SAC Watch Line. On Sunday nights, you could call home on. So I went to the room where you could call home on, waited my turn, called home to my folks. And it turned out it was like 3 o'clock in the morning, time difference, you know, from Guam to. And my dad says, "Who is this?" And I says, "It's your son." And he says, "Huh?" And I says, "Yes." He says, "How are you calling me?" And I said, "I'm in Guam." He says, "You're supposed to be in Thailand." And I said, "Well, I got moved around." But that was one of the features you could do back then. And you remember what Looking Glass was?
Help me.
It was the Airborne Command Centers.
Oh, okay. Okay, yeah.
So anyway, when that happened, I just thought, well, here's a lie that ran around the world before the truth could catch it. You know, they're not going to close that base.
No, hell no.
But it
certainly makes good, it makes good raw meat, for the weird little, you know, 20% dead enders who look for, you know, it's not like this stuff is thrown out there and then they just believe it. They, the dead enders look for stuff like this to believe. And if there isn't any fresh raw meat, they'll make some up, just like this was made up.
Mm-hmm.
So, but, you know, you understand that process.
Yes. Now, talking about your college football commercials.
Yes.
With Cole.
Yeah.
I'll just put this out there. I mean, maybe somebody can answer me, but does anybody else get clean energy commercials on their TV, like Repower America?
You know what? No. And that was entirely my point, was that, you know, we need to be going to some of these big greens and saying, you know, listen, this has to be combated. You know, all over this state, for instance, there are billboards that were put up by Walker Machinery, which has lately been sold to some, I think, German consortium through an outfit in Kentucky. And they put up, and here in a moment you will probably see one pop up in the chat room, they put up billboards all over West Virginia that say, "Coal, yes, coal, clean, carbon neutral coal." And once again, there's not a billboard out there that says, "Coal is killing us," or anything else like that, or "end mountaintop removal." It's a battlefield that we have completely ceded, because we can't get anybody out there to think that we're worth that we're worth that effort.
Well, I just wanted to make a point that it's strange, but different parts of the country, I know here in California, maybe in Oregon, maybe in Washington too, we see clean energy commercials all the time because the industry is just going crazy out here. I mean, we're building a wind farm in a mountain 50 miles away from me. It's going to be online in 2011. And we've got buildings all over town that are putting solar panels on. And you get tax credits in California, and then I had to laugh with the, what's his name, the guy from Oklahoma went to Copenhagen.
Oh, yeah, Jim Inhofe.
Inhofe. They asked him about, well, who do you think is spreading this myth or something? He had a little press conference on the stairwell there.
It was a press conference of one.
He was only there for 2 hours. There was a guy from Der Spiegel, was a Japanese guy.
Yeah, I've got the transcript right here in front of me. It's a beautiful thing. One reporter says, if there's a hoax, then who's putting on this hoax and what's the motive? And Inhofe says, it started in the United Nations, and the ones in the United States who really grab a hold of this is the Hollywood elite. And, of course, the reporters there probably don't understand because they don't speak right-wing American code, Sparky. Is that what he means when he says the Hollywood elite is he's saying it's the Jews? And then another reporter follows up, the guy from Spiegel, just looks at him and says, you are ridiculous. And,
right. I mean,
and made him eat it. Made him eat it.
Well, from what I read, some of them thought, you mean Arnold? Governor of California, because he spoke. I don't know if you saw his speech.
No, I didn't.
No, it's online. He spoke at the conference, you know, and I'm sure the Republicans are just moved closer and closer to the Democratic Party because he brought up his mother-in-law and the Special Olympics while he was talking.
Right.
It's good to watch it. I mean, you know, he's been talking.
Well, I'll try to find a few minutes to do that.
Mm-hmm. He's been talking about all kinds of stuff, and then I happened to stumble across a story yesterday about Treasure Island. You ever heard about Treasure Island in the Bay Area?
No.
Well, as you're leaving San Francisco, if you go over the Bay Bridge, there's an island that the Bay Bridge first plops down on. It used to be a Navy base during World War II. My dad got discharged out of the Navy there in 1945, early 46, I think it was, because he didn't get back till January 46, I think, from the Aleutians. But anyway, he made a big announcement there a while back on new green energy stuff, and the island they're going to build hotels there. They're going to turn it into a tourist destination in the bay and make it a green island and make it to be a place where you can go to see all the stuff that you can do with green energy. Green 960s advertised it.
Awesome. I have a lot of respect for that station. We need about 500 more green 960s. You know how that goes. Sparky, it's good to hear from you. I'm going to hit a couple more calls here because I'm running out of radio show.
I know you are.
But you have yourself a wonderful evening, all right?
Okay.
All right, take care.
Okay.
Bye now. Calling from California, that's our buddy Sparky. And on we go.
It's hey. Richard here, Bob.
Well, hey, Richard, what's up?
Well, I'm just following Sparky. I've been I've been on hold forever here and really enjoying.
So have a lot of people. It's been a very busy night.
Yeah, well, I've been enjoying what a lot of people have had to say. You know, it's just good to hear it. And, you know, you mentioned Campbell's Soup a while back. And I will do a little recitation now.
Okay.
I will raise the mood. I'm going to read the ingredients in Campbell's Tomato Soup.
Oh, dear God.
Ready?
I eat that stuff, Richard. Don't do it to me. Nah, go ahead.
Well, Bob, here we go. Tomato puree, parenthesis, water, tomato paste. Next ingredient is high fructose corn syrup.
Yeah, of course it is.
Okay. Wheat flour, water, salt, potassium chloride, and then flavoring. And then citric acid. And
wait, it just says flavoring?
Yeah.
That's creepy. If they can't name it, but they're using it to flavor it, I don't want to be eating it.
Oh, sorry, Bob.
That's okay. We're just lightening the mood here, remember.
Yeah, right, lightening the mood. Now, here is something very interesting. Lower sodium natural sea salt.
That's like clean coal.
What the hell is that?
If you lower the sodium in salt, don't you just wind up with chlorine?
Oh, beats the hell out of me. I mean, there are two.
I mean, it's one atom of sodium and one atom of chlorine.
Beats the hell out of me. And then finally, of course, we have ascorbic acid and monopotassium phosphate.
Jesus, that sounds like something you could bomb a building with.
Doesn't it? That's it. That's classic Campbell's tomato soup. I swear to you, I am not the Horn's consumer correspondent.
No, but that's okay. I'm a label reader. I mean, that, you know what? What I find surprising is that wheat flour comes before water. But I guess that's because it's condensed and it's had a lot of the water pulled out of it.
Did it? I did. Let's see. Did I say that?
Yeah.
Tomato puree. Oh, yes, you're right. Wheat flour came before.
And high fructose corn syrup comes before wheat flour or water.
That's right. It's the second ingredient.
That means it's sugary tomato paste.
Exactly.
Or not sugary, but high fructose corn syrupy tomato paste.
Well, if you go into the store and you look at salt, in addition to what's the stuff they add to it?
Iodine to keep you from getting goiters.
You'll find sugar.
Well, you know, one of the big, and I don't know the truth of this, but one of the things that, you know, way, way, way back when I rode my dinosaur to my first job, Richard, I was working in gospel radio, and, of course, my buddies were working at McDonald's and Shoney's and Captain D's and places like that. And my buddy who was working at McDonald's told me that the reason the McDonald's French fries were so yummy was because there was sugar mixed into the salt.
I believe it. Yeah. You know, the thing that is on my mind right now is that brand names don't mean much of anything anymore. And
no, because they all come from the same place. I think that's one of the things that the person at Daily Coast was writing about. You can have 38 different brands, and they're all made of the same thing, but because of branding and demographics and psychographics, they can tell you who's going to buy it based on how they market it.
Oh, very, very much so. You know,
but on the other hand, not to cut you off, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
On the other hand, what you'll find out, however, is that, for instance, if there is a botulism breakout at a green bean canning factory, it'll take down Green Giant, Del Monte, Libby's, Food Club, Kroger brand, and you know, every godforsaken green bean in the country.
Which leads me to a story. My uncle, Robin's father, came to West Virginia and became a food broker. He bought somebody else's food brokerage. And my Uncle Peter has the distinction of bringing monosodium glutamate to the hillbillies.
Somebody had to
because Accent was one of his accounts. And he would go to a grocer with some bird's eye frozen peas and some Accent. And he'd say to the grocer, here, cook up. This is better than fresh. He'd say, you know, cook up these frozen peas and sprinkle some of this into it. So that's how he did it. But I went with him to a cannery. He took us from Charleston to Ohio, middle of Ohio, Circleville. I think it's in the middle, to the Esmeralda Canning Company, where they cooked three things. They canned corn, creamed corn, and peas. That's all they did. And, of course, they...
Well, you know, Granddad always said, do three things and do them well.
Right? They did it.
Although corn, creamed corn, and peas is really two things. With modified wheat food starch added in. But never mind.
Yeah, well, notice, that's it. And they, of course, canned under a zillion different labels, you know, to underscore what you just said.
Right. Libby's, Del Monte, Green Giant, Food Club, Kroger brand. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, all of it. And the thing that was so fascinating to me, I was a kid at the time, but The factory was divided into two sections, one of which was unionized and the other one which was not. And the union part was spick and span. That was the canning part. Spotless. Everybody looked, you know, decently fed, decently dressed, clean.
But the non-union part, on the other hand.
The non-union part consisted of, well, when I went there, it was corn. So the corn was coming down a conveyor belt, and these toothless old ladies with machetes were, you know, stripping the, what do you call it, what's the green part?
Oh, the husk, the shucks.
Yeah.
They were shucking the corn.
They were shucking the corn, and they were hacking off the, you know, the corn, what do you call it, the kernels, with their machetes. And the husks were going out.
The mental image alone, Richard, is terrifying.
It is, but, you know, and they were living in cardboard shacks out the back of the factory, the women, the old ladies, you know. And it was such an education for me. I never forgot it. And this was in Ohio.
And, you know, I am such a victim of the cartoons to which I was subjected growing up. You know what's going through my head right now, Richard?
What's that?
the Warner Brothers industrial theme. And they used it, in fact, in one of those the two little chipmunks who got caught in the canning factory.
Oh my God.
And the you know, and one of them gets in the can and everything. But sorry, I know that there are Warner Brothers freaks out there that know exactly what I'm talking about.
I love this stuff.
But I'm sorry, the minute you mentioned cannery and the assembly line and the cans going down the neat steel, because, excuse me, because among other things, what cartoons were celebrating was the arrival of that technology. And the American can-do and know-how that went along with it.
That's correct.
And you get to, I'm sorry, I'm having to interact with the chat room, too. That was not Chip and Dale. Chip and Dale are Disney characters. Oh, God, it's pitiful, isn't it? But, you know, Birdseye comes along with his flash frozen peas.
Yes.
And we forget what fresh tastes like.
That's such a puzzle to me. You know, I've been noticing the ingredients in frozen food and in canned foods. There's preservatives in the meat, in both.
Well, look, I mean...
And then, you know, what the hell do they need to put preservatives in these things? They're preserved by the process, aren't they?
Well, they're supposed to be, but there's all kinds of little creatures. And not only that, Richard, you've got to bear in mind that any time you buy meat in a can, whether it's, you know, Campbell's beef with barley soup or Dinty Moore beef stew or anything like that... we learned a long time ago that that's really, really awful because they use the downer cattle for that.
Do they?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that came out
because
and
it's cheaper, huh?
Well, yeah, because you know it doesn't have to look like anything in the grocer's meat case.
That's true.
And so the whole if a cow, in other words, just to make sure that everyone enjoys their supper tonight, even in the Hawaii time zone. John Fox is getting ready for lunch, and we're going to work him over, too. What that means is, like, when a cow gets sick and dies and can't... Well, he doesn't have to deal with it because he's got a responsible government in Australia, but never mind. When a cow gets sick and dies, they pick it up with a forklift and throw it in a vat. I mean, I'm exaggerating a little bit, but not much.
My supper.
Well, it's only fair. You took tomato soup from me, Richard. What do you want?
Well, you took turkey from me.
Well, okay. Okay, guilty as charged.
That was Chinese turkey, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
Yeah. Now, my...
it only comes with a left wing, you know? I mean,
there's a grocery store not far from me, you know, produce market, and... I went in there one day, and I was looking at, he's got the peeled garlic in a box. And this garlic is grown about 90 miles to the south of me in Gilroy, California. It's the garlic capital of the world.
Yes, so, it is, and I know that because I've got a little braid of garlic that was sent to me from the Gilroy Garlic Festival.
Yes. Who sent it to you?
Can't remember. Years
ago.
Yeah,
that's cool. Well, this garlic got here by way of China. So it was sent from Gilroy to China where it was peeled and then sent back here.
Oh, for God's sakes. You know, I used to live in a place that had, because in West Virginia there are a profusion of black walnut trees. Not English walnuts, black walnuts. And they're an American thing, I think. And they grow with these great green husks around them. And you let them dry, and then you have to shell the husks off, and they will turn your hands purple in the process. And then you have to crack the walnuts themselves, which, and I think it's actually not a nut, it's a drupe. But anyway, that's D-R-U-P-E. Anyway, they grow profusely around here. They leach lots of toxins into the soil so that you can't, or tannins, rather, so that you can't plant a garden around one. But anyway, a little community has a black walnut festival here, okay? And
yep.
So I remember going to it one time and thinking, well, I'm at the Black Walnut Festival, no place like this to get, God, might as well get some fresh black walnuts, by God. Product of California. Ah! And
why?
Because we're too lazy. Because shucking black walnuts is a pain in the ass.
Oh, and the other thing is...
And then I go to the Strawberry Festival. Then I go to the Strawberry Festival. And the Strawberry Festival, with all its fresh strawberries, the strawberries are from the Florida.
Really? I wouldn't touch them. They're probably poisoned, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, with chemicals. Well, you know, let me flip this around for a moment. I have a lot of horror stories on my own stack here. But the question on my mind is what do we do about all this?
And, you know, that's the $64 question, Richard.
Yeah, I mean, whenever I look at any of this stuff and the politics and this horrible healthcare debacle that's been taking place, the phrase follow the money keeps coming into my head.
Oh, certainly. And the thing that keeps coming into my head is this nasty, dire little thing that I said last night that, and I think I was echoing maybe Reverbo, and that is, we are rapidly approaching the status of failed state.
Oh, definitely.
It's not because you can't have regulation, and it's not because government is inherently bad. It's because there is a nasty little cancerous cadre of people who, with the support of corporate America, are just present enough, and sometimes they're the majority in our government, to make sure that none of the things that we the people set up to safeguard the well-being of we the people actually does that.
Understood. I've been reading through some poll results. My library has a stack of, they have a big box, and people throw things in the box that they want to recycle, you know, magazine.
Right.
Mostly. So it's a wonderful source for me for Politico and The Week, which is, you ever see The Week?
No, I don't think so.
It's a weekly. It comes out in New York. It's British owned. And it's sort of a homogenization, a digest of, you know, the nation's press. There's something smarmy about it, but they're good for sort of concatenating various things that are out there. So I was looking at some poll results in both of these, and I'm thinking, boy, you know, it's like the radical fundamentalists and the media that feeds them. They make a lot of noise, you know, and we look at this and we say, oh my God, O'Reilly did this, and Vex said that yesterday, and you know, Limbaugh did, oh, you know. But the thing that we lose sight of, I think, in reacting to, you know, to the incendiary language that these people put out is that they're not the majority.
No, they're not.
You know, there's
but we are at a point politically in this country, Richard, where the myth of majority rule is so far past dead that, you know, to go to another easy reference, Monty Python, it's coughing up blood on the back stoop.
Right, right.
Because
we have this view of ourselves too, and I think we're partially emasculated.
It's not a view of ourselves, Richard, if I may differ with you.
Okay, go ahead.
It is a view that has been manufactured of ourselves that we have been conditioned to believe is a view of ourselves.
Okay, but the bottom line
is it exists.
Yeah, it winds up the same thing. We get depressed and we get demoralized and you know, we say to ourselves, "Oh my God, what's the use? Look at what Obama's doing." You know, insert politician X here. And, you know, I'm not immune from it myself a lot of times.
No, none of us are. But the one thing that we can do, Richard, is be at least aware enough inside the nightmare to be in a state of constant questioning.
Right. And we have to, you know, do something. This is the part, of course, that I don't know, is what to do next. And I think it's a good topic of discussion. So let's say I go to my congressman, and what do I want from this guy? How do I get his attention?
Well, I don't think, honest to God, at least where health care is concerned, I don't think you got a problem right now. We had the discussion about George Miller and about the Kucinich Amendment and all of that stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But we've got something approaching the semblance of a viable bill coming out of the House, okay? The Senate is the problem. And just
right.
By way of a hint, Richard, I will suggest that let's time travel for a minute. Let's think if we can sort of go through some sort of alternate reality universe. Let's imagine that the Republican Party, under the leadership of Senator Bill Catkiller Frist of Tennessee, wanted to pass an insurance-friendly health care bill in 1998. All right?
Okay.
Or, no, let's make that 2003. If any Democrat had so much as hinted at the idea of a filibuster, Bill the Cat Killer Frist would have said, "Well, we're not afraid to go nuclear on you. And we'll just take away your right to filibuster if you won't be like that."
Right.
And then the mugwump dinos like Mary Landrieu and Blanche Lincoln would have gotten together and formed a gang of 13 and said, "Oh, please, Jesus, don't mess with sacred Senate traditions. We'll knuckle under and give you your bill." Okay?
Yeah.
Well, come back into the present and into the reality world. The so-called nuclear option has never been mentioned, not once, in this entire process. There has never been so much as a threat. Meanwhile, from the very moment that Barack Obama took office and that a Democratic majority took its place in the United States Senate, the Republican Party has been allowed to consistently and without fail block and obstruct every blessed thing that the people of the United States and the sundry states sent a majority to the Senate to do.
Why?
Why which? Why are the Republicans allowed to do it?
Well, not that so much. I mean, the Republicans are doing what they do, you know. But why are the Democrats letting it get away with it?
Because it is simply put a failure of leadership. Harry Reid knows that if he said we're going to go nuclear on the Republican Party, grand old men like Robert Byrd would stand up and say, "Over my dead body." Because the Senate and its traditions mean more than doing, and I'm not criticizing Senator Byrd here, but honest to God, the Senate and its traditions mean more than doing the business of the American people. And there's a mindset inside the Senate that says if you can't come to consensus, if you can't come to some sort of, if you can't pull up a significant majority, then the American people doesn't need it. Don't need it.
Again, again, I have to come back to the question of what do we do about this? Because...
Well, you know, it would probably ring hollow, but, you know, if you had just a bare naked suggestion, for instance, in California, your senators, Barbara Boxer and Dianne Feinstein, need to hear from you that you are sick unto grim death with the mealy-mouthed, wishy-washy leadership of Harry Reid, and that he's got to go, and that if he doesn't go, that you'll take it out on them.
Good. Yeah.
And that's how you, and that is how you foment a so-called palace coup inside, inside the Senate. Richard, I've got a beautiful conversation. I've got a couple minutes left, and I want to try to
okay.
get a couple more calls in. But thank you very much for a lot of scintillating conversation.
Great. So long, Bob.
Take care, Richard.
Everybody. Yeah. Bye.
Bye. That's Richard calling from the Bay Area of California, and onward we go. Nope. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. How about you?
Holding together, sort of, kind of, somewhere.
Yeah, I know how that goes.
So you guys are preparing for the blizzard, eh?
It's already upon us, Cossack. Like I said, it started, I don't think you'd come into the room yet. It started about 2:30 this afternoon, and by the time I was sitting down in here, there was a couple of inches on the ground, and I'd imagine there's probably 4 or 5 inches on the ground by now. The big, big wet, just floppy stuff.
Ah. Yeah, I heard from my buddy up in Northern Virginia. Well, they're batting down the hatches, and they're expecting a foot or two of snow.
They're telling us 12 to 18 inches here.
Yeah. It's fun to look at.
And fun to stay. You know, my only concern is that our tired old roof hold up.
Yeah.
And that's a real open real open question, sadly. But, no, it is. It's beautiful to look at. You know, I've got the boots. I've got the socks. And I probably will go out and walk in it tonight. Maybe I'll take my lovely wife with me for a walk in the snow, and we'll make snow angels together or something.
Oh, that'll work.
There ain't no way she's getting out in it.
Oh, you're kidding.
No, my lovely wife is, as I've noted on a number of occasions, a reptile. Her body is the same temperature as the air around her. She won't move. She won't move for a week if she goes into the cold. And I say that with all the love in the world. I mean, she acknowledges it.
Yeah.
You know, in the dead of winter, when it really gets brutal out there, I'll be walking around in a pair of gym shorts and nothing else, and she'll be wearing, you know, like heavy clothes with the heat run up as high as it'll go. And I'll be, honey, please, I can't take any more clothes off. But that's my darling Agnes.
Yeah. Set up some heating lamps for.
you mean like you put over your little gecko cage?
Yeah.
Yeah, serves the same purpose. Yep.
It'll work. But, you know, I hate to say this, but I pointed out to people during the run-up to the election that they shouldn't take Obama at their particular preference. Because Obama said from the very beginning, I am a mainline politician.
Well, yeah, and there was, but there was something about the Obama candidacy, Cossack, that reminded me a little bit of, pardon me, St. Paul. You remember in one of Paul's letters when he says, "Lo, I am all things to all men."
Mm-hmm.
That, without a doubt.
He was a cipher that people could read into whatever they wanted.
Yeah, he was a projection screen.
And
it comes as no surprise to me, but I also you know, I harbor some little sick bit of idealism that hopes that somewhere along the way he will be, because I think, you know, he's not a sociopath. He knows the difference between right and wrong.
Oh yeah.
It's providing him with the opportunity to do the difference between right and wrong that is that's the ultimate challenge right now, and the thing that prevents him from doing right as opposed to half-assed, middle-of-the-road, wishy-washy, or outright wrong, is that weird little cancerous cadre of right-wing freaks who inhabit the United States Senate.
Yeah. Well, that and the, I hate to say it, but the clique that Obama brought with him. He surrounded himself with a bunch of has-beens and inside the Beltway fixtures that really are no change of anything and never were.
Right.
And never were meant to be. Rahm Emanuel is anything but new politics.
Oh, I think you're right.
Yeah, and Summers and Geithner are crying out loud. They are puppets of Wall Street.
Sure.
They're their best friends. And this is the people that he's taking advice from.
Well, exactly.
Which is terrifying.
And, you know, and it becomes a question of what do we do? And frankly, I'm sorry, but I don't know. I don't know. We've got something of significance has to happen inside the United States Senate, or his ability to get anything through the Senate will doom him in his attempt to be reelected, because he will be he will be deemed ineffective.
Yeah.
And the greatest crime of it all is if he is deemed ineffective as a result of the failure of a Senate that he had a majority in. And frankly, I question the dedication of some so-called Democrats in the United States Senate.
Oh, sure.
And for the same old sorry ass reasons. I think there are some lily white members. Wait a minute, they're all lily white, aren't they? With one exception of the United States Senate, who don't like having a black man in the Oval Office. I just, in my bones, I think it's true, Cossack. And it sickens me.
Unfortunately, it's true.
But unfortunately, also, I'm over time, so I got to get out of here.
Oh, all right.
Thank you, my friend. Have a wonderful weekend.
All right,
at least
care.
It ain't snowing on you.
Yep.
All right. Take care, Cossack.
Okay.
Bye now.
Okay.
Bye. And we are going to head out of here, but real quick-like, just so you can have the same earworm in your head that I have in mine, for you, this. I hope. And that, by the way, what I always referred to as the Warner Brothers industrial theme, is a Raymond Scott tune called Powerhouse. So now you can have it running through your head, too, just because I love you. So it's time to get out of here. You guys have a wonderful weekend. Thanks for all your help going forward, keeping things going through December and hopefully into January. You'll never know how much it means. Well, actually, you kind of will, as long as we're able to hot up the mic, keep hotting up the mic whenever a show goes live. Remember, the Rick Smith Show comes your way both Saturday and Sunday this weekend, as does All Foxed Up at 9 p.m. Eastern Time Sunday evening. Be there. Aloha. Bookum Dano. Thanks to Ben Birch, to Peter Godbold, to John Fox for all that they individually and together do to make the horn work. Thanks to all our chat room moderators, to Sue, to Lottie. Thanks to our news ninjas, both Gene and Susan, and our blogger, Texas Betsy. It takes a lot to make the horn go, and it takes you, too. Thank you for your calls, your emails, your ideas, your chat room fun. You make this a mighty special little undertaking. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. You know why I call them that. It's been proven time and again. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Tell you, for this time of the year, it is a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful night in the hills and hollers of almost level West Virginia. They're predicting up somewhere between 12 and 18 inches of snow for us, and it seems to be coming through as promised. The snow started about 2:30 this afternoon in great wet clumps. Quickly covered the ground, quickly covered the roads. I should know, I was on one. And as by the time I got home, there were at least 2 inches of snow on the ground. And the silence of December snow is unlike anything else. And I guess, you know, for those of you who grew up with snow and grew up in the north, snow is just a regular occurrence and it's a pain in the butt. And, it is. But there's still that little itty-bitty, tiny, just sort of minuscule molecular me that remembers what it was to be young in Alabama when the snow came. And what a miracle it seemed. And what a joy it was, and how it all came all too seldom and was gone all too quickly. And that little guy is what's looking out the windows of my eyes during the first couple of snows of any given winter. And it was beautiful, and it is beautiful. And I, honest to God, I think I'll put the boots on and then the heavy clothes and go for a walk in it this evening. Just to appreciate how it lights up the night with its own reflective power. And then by tomorrow I'll be cursing it. But it's beautiful. And what a lovely backdrop, what a lovely radio setting for a Friday night on the front porch right here on the Horn. We've replaced the long necks in their, zinc galvanized wash tub. We've replaced the long necks with a little bit of mulled cider. You know how it goes. You heat your cider up with your cinnamon and your cloves and your other spices and your orange peel and your lemon peel and your cinnamon stick and pour that into a glass of good rum and it's good and hot. Ah, it'll set you right if you're sitting on the front porch.